3, 2, 1, go.
Louisa, thank you for being on the Technocrat Live.
My pleasure.
Louisa Petsides.
That's correct. You
right.
Got it.
Yes, I got it. So apparently people have been messing up your name forever.
Since school? Yes.
Yeah, they were pretty, there were some pretty brutal allegory. You wouldn't think it with Newhall, but they were pretty creative. There was a couple of really brutal ones, so.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
No offense, it seems kind of vanilla.
It does, right?
Newhall.
You know, I think it's just, you know what, 7th and 8th graders are the cruelest people in the world.
7th and 8th graders?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
It started with me a little younger.
They're
I was like the little Greek girl, the only little Greek girl in class.
Yeah.
So,
was that weird, or it's weird because for me, I knew some, you know Jeannie.
Of course.
And her family. I knew them growing up.
I
so like I'm like, you know, to me it's normal to have Greeks. There were several Greeks in our school, so I guess you just won a bad lottery or something.
Not in my elementary school, but I encountered Greeks in high school. So I had kumbaras, as we call it. Kumbaros and kumbaras.
Ah, really? What does that mean? I don't even know what that means.
Compadre, companion, paisan was the Greek word for it.
Right. Cool. So, well, thank you so much for coming on. I have a couple of news items I want to go over.
Sure.
Here, I'm going to mispronounce. Speaking of mispronunciation, let's talk about Huawei.
Huawei.
Thank you. I keep doing
that.
So you brought up Huawei last time, and Steve brought up Huawei, and I had missed it. So I have some interesting information. Have you heard about this?
They're the networking company in China.
No, they're hardware.
Hardware.
So there was a security thing with them.
Hardware.
So the accusation has been going around. We have started embargoing them.
Yes.
Because the accusation is that they're spying on us.
Ah.
And they're spying in general. So. So this is interesting. You might think this is going to turn political, but actually, it's a surprise. It's not the way that people might think it was. So actually, Trump did a ban on them. So what the ban is it bans their company from buying parts and components from American firms.
Okay.
So it's just banning their company from buying ours.
So they can't copy our tech.
Right. I think that's the idea. But also it's kind of a symbolic way to say, hey, we're serious about this.
Mm.
And it's a first step,
mm-hmm.
you know. So a couple interesting things happened with this. So the head of Huawei, Liang
Hua?
Hua? Anyway, said they can get a no spy. They're willing to do a no-spy agreement where we guarantee that we won't spy on them and they'll guarantee they won't spy on us. So kind of like a de-escalation.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, it's like, how can you negotiate? You're a private company who's out to maximize your profits. So that negotiation really should be between the Chinese government and the United States government.
Correct.
Because otherwise there's no enforcement mechanism. So I'm like, how does that work? So, but the funny thing is, there's been a couple of foolish people jumping on the political bandwagon with this Huawei thing. And actually, the funny thing is, it turns out last December was the United States had no interest in Huawei. We weren't paying attention to them, or at least not publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And Australia, New Zealand, and Japan were all publicly petitioning for us to punish or to confront Huawei about the spying thing. So actually, we got dragged into it by some of our allies.
Mm-hmm.
So this wasn't us this time. So at least it didn't start with us. Now it is us, but
it didn't
start that way. I thought that was interesting and kind of a little more clarification on exactly what happened. Also, I have some news for the show. So I just as a silly thing, I put up a Technocrat Live playlist of music that I just thought would be fun music for technocrats. If you have any suggestions, and basically it needs to be musically sound, probably something that was popular at one point with someone, and like, you know, something that's really like good for technocrats. You know, feel free to put them in the comments, and maybe I'll add them to the playlist. I'm going to be a brutal dictator on this.
I got a big list for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a brutal dictator on this. So if I don't like if I don't love it, I'm not going to put it up. Doesn't mean it's not good. Doesn't mean it's not appropriate. I just, you know, there's a lot of playlists out there, so I got to be picky. The DJ's in it for everybody, so I'm going to be the DJ for the technocrats out
there.
Awesome. So yeah, I just thought it'd be a fun thing to do. So, and if you have any other questions, just feel free to put them in the comments and. ask away. So Louisa knows security pretty well. I know administration. She's been part of my part of our group, our security group, not the LILUG group, but a different group. Part of LILUG.
Yes.
But a very more focused in on keeping large numbers of servers from getting hacked. So feel free to ask any questions you might have about security or whatnot. The next show is going to be a little different, so just a fair warning. I'm going to have Mike and Matt on, who actually have their own podcast, and they're going to be the first non-technocrats on the show. So if the format of the show bugs you, this might be different. On the other hand, if the format of the show bugs you, this might be a good opportunity to find out about them and go check out their show. So next week, check that out. And hopefully they'll pitch me the same way. Like, if you find us too silly and not factual enough, please visit Matt at thetechnocratlive.com.
Masterpiece Theater.
Masterpiece.
You have to worry about
that's
the
awesome.
I did
five notes, and I didn't actually do it right, and you knew what I was talking about anyway, so it's not a copyright violation. What?
Oh, don't mean.
So, and of course, we're going to do the panel that we did was really popular, so we're going to do panel number two at the end of the month. So, and you're invited. So, if you want to be on it, let me know if you're available. And
panels are fun, I have to say.
Panels are spectacular, and the best part about them is I get to ask tougher questions. I like to be nice when I'm doing this, but on the panel I can be mean because there's five people and it's not really my fault, right? They're just killing each other. So, you know, kind of like Chronicles of Riddick, right? Just turn the lights out and they're killing each other. Sorry if you haven't seen Chronicles of Riddick yet.
Two-month rule.
Yeah, two-decade rule. All right, so let's see. So, there was one more thing. So, did you guys do DevOps at all? So, you work in the healthcare industry, and you're a security manager. I didn't know you were a manager. I thought you were just. I thought you were just like, you know, one of the.
Girl.
No, I didn't.
Token girl.
Do you get that a lot?
I do it to myself.
You do it to yourself.
I do it to myself.
So, I mean, like, there's one. On the one hand, you can make things fun and lighthearted. On the other hand, you can, you know, you can sink yourself and you go,
Right.
There's like a spectrum between like lots of fun and total bitch.
Serious.
And like
bitch.
Somewhere in between, you got to find the happy space, right?
No, I've learned to, my personality is I'm always self-deprecating. I mean, I pick on myself before I pick on anybody else.
That's really interesting.
I don't ever want somebody to feel bad, but on the unless I want them to feel bad. Wait a minute. I have a self-deprecating sense of humor, and I actually insist on an environment where you can crack a joke, you can crack a dirty joke, you can release through humor, because technology and IT can get very stressful.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. Twitch. and so if you can't, you know, crack a fart joke or make fun of my name, I didn't get to tell you how, okay, it went from being picked on as a child to, you know, the Greek girl or PPCDs or whatever they say, to me
also
saying,
seventh and eighth graders
no, my name is not Louisa Petite Tits. Do these tits look petite? No. So I get more...
All right, icebreaker, we're good.
Exactly. I get...
Want a drink?
It ain't over.
Continue.
But, what do they say? You get more bees with honey or flies with honey.
Right.
Than you
do
with vinegar.
That's the most crazy thing.
So I feel like if I sweet and make fun of myself, that I kind of, like you said, break the ice, and I'm able to build relationships with people who I have to work with, and I know there are men who are uptight because they don't know how to act.
And part of that is industry
either
specific.
Socially, it is. I've seen What, can I mention Lilog?
What do you mean?
Walking into Lilog, being one of two women, you know.
And we're good.
And
we've pretty,
gotten better.
We've got a ratio,
but,
you know. But, unlike some places don't even have one. It's an infinite to nothing.
But I mean, however long it was ago that I began to attend Lilog, I remember there was a guy there who was just, you could tell this man, it was...
That's okay. Was not really exposed
it's a spa.
To women.
Just think of it as a spa.
Yeah.
Yeah, take care of me. Yes.
But this gentleman was not really exposed to seeing women very often. So I was with a friend, and he was staring.
Right.
Staring. And, you know, I noticed it. She didn't. I know he was staring at her probably more than me.
Mm-hmm.
But I get that he's probably, you know,
well, he might be on the spectrum, so that's one of the things that happens.
I know, you talked about that on one of your other shows.
Right.
There is that.
Right.
But,
so that's actually a symptom of a... Now, of course, we're not talking about somebody with, a mild case of... Asperger's. I'm talking about, someone with full-blown autism, like really unable to function socially.
It's amazing.
When they get that far, sometimes one of the symptoms is just staring.
Right. Right.
And it can actually be, it could even be Asperger's, It can even
it can be.
And it just I think a lot of it is that the input-output mechanism is kind of busted up.
Yeah.
I think that that's what's really going. It's not that they don't have feelings like everyone else, because there's been a lot of analogies between psychopaths and autism, the autism spectrum.
Really?
And I think, but it's just a misnomer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what's actually going, the psychopaths are, they don't have the empathy. I think it's just, they just can't express how they feel, or they can't accept the expression from other people.
Right.
It's there, it's just, there's a wall in the way.
I think people who are autistic or have Asperger's, they have it pent up inside, and they just don't know how to express it.
Mm-hmm.
There's like...
Right, and one of the consequences is staring.
Staring or other things.
Also, 7th and 8th graders, right? So, meanest people in the world.
Yeah.
I had strange feelings I don't understand yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. It's adolescence. It's arrested development.
Mm-hmm.
So I can recognize it, and I deal with
Does that happen to you as the boss?
No. Actually, since I've stepped into management, I've actually been lucky, cursed and lucky, cursed and blessed, to build my own team.
Oh,
now, when I first stepped in, I had inherited a team, and the team that I inherited actually were jaded. They were sliced down.
Mm-hmm.
It was a minimal team. They were four people. It's cut down to two. The two that were there, one of them had been overlooked for promotions and had applied for the manager position that I scored.
Right.
So it could have been him hating me, but I am a very, no-nonsense person, and I had one-on-ones with them, and I said, listen, whatever came before, I don't care. We're starting fresh.
I've had that too.
Yeah,
I know exactly where you're coming
from. You know what I mean? And apparently I gained their respect because it came back to me through the grapevine.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, unfortunately, both of them ended up separating from the company on different terms.
Right.
But it did come back to me that wasn't the reason.
Right.
In fact, it came back to me that they respected me and they were looking forward to working with me, but for whatever reason, they didn't. So I got to build a team, and I got to choose personalities.
You have this relationship with a company, and it's like having a relationship with a person, but the company's just this big blob of people and policies, and it's a moving target.
Right.
And like
you don't know what came before.
And if you get lied to or burnt so many times, you're just like, I don't trust you anymore. I need need it right now up front or I'm out of here. You know, and I've been there. I've gotten to that situation where
I have too.
And I think it's our industry. It's just like jobs go like this.
Well, that was
one
of
the only way
things.
Management knows how to handle promoting people is like getting frustrating them until they quit and then hiring a new one.
Very few times do I ever see promotion from within, and that's a shame.
Right.
But you know, later on we could talk about it. But that's kind of what I meant by there's an industry burnout.
Talk about it now. I'll bring it up.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll keep segueing back.
Well, I think there is a burnout in IT, in IT in general. I mean, cybersecurity is separate because cybersecurity is growing,
right?
And we need people. There's 0% unemployment there. Kids that are going into school now, they know that's where the money is. They know that's where the jobs are. So they want to get into cyber.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care. But
right.
The whole IT industry, system admins, people who have been, you know, pushing the buttons and flicking the levers, they're burnt out. I don't blame them because there's a lot of repetition.
Right.
There's a push to stay on top of technologies, to keep up with the Joneses. Right.
Right. Right. So there's one thing that was happening. You know, I started in tech basically by quitting college and going into tech in the .com boom.
And oh wow! What
there
a
were
time.
There were a lot of fakers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I would say a third.
I think that's
going
to come
of the admin and management, particularly in the management space, because you can fake it longer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and there were a lot of fakers. And, it was tough. So are you finding that's happening now in cybersecurity? Are there people who come in and be like...
I'm worried. I'm worried that's going to happen. honestly, so things have shifted in the 12 years that I've been in security.
Uh-huh.
You know,
used to be
called information security. Now it's cyber
security. You were in security before it was cool.
Yes, I was.
You were in security before pre-Snowden, and that's when it
yes,
turned cool.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
February 2007
right.
is when I got my break in security administration.
Nice.
And then I crawled my way up, like scratched and crawled and punched and kicked, but rose.
But that's just code, you know.
Yeah.
That's just code and logs.
SecAdmin is just, it's data entry. It's freaking data entry and
right.
databases. And then getting into the analyst role, that was a little bit more exciting because I like solving problems and I like analysis. I actually do.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to make sense of it. There has to be meaning.
I know at least one person who has demoted themselves. You know them. You know them too. Who demoted himself to the nth degree, just so he could get into analysis. So because he liked it so much.
Oh, it is. It takes me back to. I think probably if you were to psychoanalyze me or talk about how I
would
got
you like
into
a
IT. Oh wait.
Good catch. Don't worry.
I love puzzles.
Yeah.
You know, growing up as a kid, my mom had me doing jigsaws with her, Rubik's Cube,
mm-hmm.
gaming, Atari.
Wait. Did you solve the Rubik's Cube?
No, I didn't.
All right. Nobody did it.
I took it apart.
I did the stickers, too. I was like,
no.
There's an obvious solution.
Sticker.
I solved it. Thinking outside the box. It's on the logo.
I saw, this here's marketing for you. There was some book probably in Toys R Us or whatever, a little thin book, How to Solve the Rubik's Cube. So I'm like, I'm going to figure it out. So I bought the book. It tells you, take a screwdriver, pop each piece out, and rearrange it. So I did that. I broke my Rubik's Cube, and I couldn't put it back together again.
Oh, that sucks.
What kind of a maker am I?
So my son has two. He has one that's all messed up, and one that's done. One that's perfect. So if he feels like having a perfect Rubik's Cube, he just switches Rubik's Cube. That's the solution too, right? Throw some money at it.
No, there was pleasure in getting it, only so that one color was different
right.
on the top. So I got it as close as possible.
I think it was 3 weeks or 4 weeks. It's like 3.5 weeks before anyone solved it when it came out. It literally was 3.5 weeks that no one on earth.
I just remember the guy doing it with one hand, and I'm like,
right.
Whoa.
Well, once one guy figured it out, and once then let someone video record him, then it was just, you know, it's like a pattern. If you're following, it always works.
Patterns and sequences, and any puzzles like that. So if I didn't get the Rubik's Cube, I think there was another similar type of puzzle called the pyramid. That one I solved. Mm. The snake.
Yep.
Any of the little bead puzzles. I loved all that
with
stuff.
The
Matt.
Sorry. Now I think I should have had a Rubik's Cube. There was one available. I could have brought it and just.
I wish this was show and tell.
Right.
Right. Would have brought in some really cool stuff.
If you're going to be on the show, and I'm planning to, do an announce a season two at some point.
Okay.
And then I'll start having people back on.
I would love to bring some crap.
Bring toys.
Bring Merlin. Do you remember Merlin? Merlin. I bring a lot of stuff that was early electronics and books and stories.
Yeah, so. with the pre-drawn LED characters, and they only have so many of them printed on, like all the old video games where you have, what I'm talking about.
Well, it's like a red light.
Every handheld game for 10 years in the 80s, pretty much. Like football Donkey
with
Kong.
The little red light. Is it an LED? No.
Those were LEDs. They didn't have the blue ones yet. So early 90s, someone figured out, patented blue LEDs.
Okay.
Before that, it was just the red and the green.
Okay.
So without the blue LEDs, they couldn't do LED screens.
Oh, you just reminded me of something.
Yeah, go ahead, sure.
It's a calculator. I have my very first calculator, and it had, if you got the calculation right, it would light the little green light. It was a little owl. He had a green light in one eye and a red light in the other eye.
There you go.
Kind of like speak and spell, I guess.
Those are the two okay colors.
Yes, I didn't know that.
Yep. Cool. So there was the blue LED was the elusive one. Okay, so what were we talking about? So
burnout.
We were talking about burnout.
Yeah.
Has anybody burned out under your watch? I mean, people you actually
picked. I feel sometimes that
we're under your total tutelage.
Under my
it's going to happen eventually, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to happen eventually, but it if you sense you're burning out, I think that's when you make your jump to another company. And
right,
in this day and age, there's no loyalty.
You
stay 2 years here, 3 years there, and you jump higher up. I mean, that's what I did, and honestly, that's what the youth is doing.
Are you a Marvel fan?
Somewhat. You're talking about the movies or the comics?
The movies.
Okay. Yes,
yeah.
I am.
The MCU.
I've seen them all.
Oh, you've seen them all. Okay. Thor Ragnarok, where Sakaar, where all the junk is just accumulating on the planet.
Yes.
That's kind of what happens with responsibilities in IT. And eventually you get to a point where you're like, I can't handle this anymore.
Yeah.
I can't even manage this anymore. And the only thing you can do is quit, because that forces your management, not necessarily your immediate supervisor, but, the people up the chain to go, okay, we need to actually redistribute these tasks in a way that they can be done, right?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, you totally did it wrong. That's what it is. Yeah, it's my fault. I wanted lapel mics because I'm like, oh, no one will notice them. It'll be like when nothing's going on.
But
except for the guy popping out of the bush to fix your mic.
They didn't see me.
You were a ghost.
In his mind, they didn't see me.
He's the Flash. Speaking of Marvel. But DC. That's DC. Ooh, bad.
It's Quicksilver and Marvel. Yeah. What?
You might have seen the beanie as a shark fin, but that's it. I was invisible.
Sharks are embarrassed because their fins poke over the water.
Poke over the water. Oh.
Yeah. Poor sharks.
Just don't sing that shark song, please. I can't stand
that. Is there
that.
A shark song out
there? Let's not mention it.
Okay, all right. Not mentioning the shark song.
Oh.
Don't.
We'll play it after.
Man. Is it like the Badger song? Remember that?
It's a child song about sharks that's like auto-tuned and made into a club hit.
My kids probably listen to it. Most likely my kids listen to it. I probably just tuned them out completely at this point.
Exactly. But going back to what we were saying about burnout and changing positions, roles, or just knowing when to leave a company.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a personal story. I was with a company between 2013 to almost the end of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And I pretty much was told that I wasn't going to rise there. I was going to be the identity and access specialist.
Mm-hmm.
That my job was to do the onboarding and the terminations. Oh, and the projects. Oh, and when another person left, I got to take on their responsibilities. But there are no...
Well, that's how you get rid of someone. You just keep giving them responsibilities and they're forced to quit.
There was that... company had a turnstile, I guess, you know, a revolving door of people coming into the it was actually security aligned with risk, into that area, coming in and leaving. They would do a year, some of them wouldn't even get past 6 months because of management. And,
right.
And part of the problem with the management there was that... there were people in management who shouldn't have been in management because they were there
and they
so
end up
long
spending all the company resources
that the company moved them up. I mean, they just didn't understand how to manage the area.
Right.
And I thought that I was giving good feedback, but instead I was looked at in a negative way. It was one of the first, the only companies that I wasn't
very familiar.
That I wasn't appreciated.
Would you do blah 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 in meetings? Blah blah blah. You know, like you felt like you said, "Would you please pass the jelly?"
I know, right? Put your hand down your pants, sitting back.
I don't think that's going to work.
But, and I felt like, I'm like, hey, I'm only trying to help you people out. You hired me. I'm the expert. I'm telling you what needs to change here to make things better. But you don't want to hear it? Okay. I see the future of my career going,
right. Do you think that was because you were a girl? Do you think it was because...
No, that was because of management... And because there was favoritism.
Nepotism.
Okay.
Good old-fashioned nepotism.
I don't know if it was nepotism, but there definitely was alliance.
You gotta wonder sometimes what's going on when that kind of thing happens. Like, is there blackmail pictures, you know, envelopes in people's desks, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I heard stories.
Petridge Farm remembers.
I've heard stories about stuff that was on CCTV or captured, happening in the data center, and no one was supposed to see, secret rendezvous. I always take that as, that's just gossip, company gossip. But then when other people corroborate, certain people get into power, that you're just like, that person doesn't know what the hell they're doing.
Right.
I know why they're there.
It's sad when that happens.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm sad for them because I know that they've got to like basically sell their soul just to stay alive.
Right. They're trapped. They really are.
Yeah. It's not you that's trapped. You can just move to another job. So, and what do you end up having to, right?
Yeah.
So, that's interesting. I wanted to bring up something. I wanted to bring up the shark song. No, just kidding. Not the shark song. I
wanted to bring up. Don't you dare play it. I will take this mic off.
We've had our first walkout. Steve just went too far and played the shark song. Go play it.
Oh, freaking play it. if you need to play
That's
it.
What I'm walking out. I've had it. We all walk out. But definitely we walk out. If we all walk out and protest our own show, we have to leave the camera rolling on the empty room just to make it weird. I'll just do that so you can see the time.
Yeah, there you go.
They literally ended the show and they got up and they left. I'm like, you coming? I'm like, yeah. And then we just killed the lights and they left.
Damn it, they got to it already. They
drop
already
the
did.
Mic.
The ultimate mic drop. The studio drop.
I'll show you after the show.
Cool, great. Yeah, they're growing on me. I enjoyed their show a week before that. Not that I didn't enjoy last week's show, I just didn't get a chance to see it yet. But they have a bunch of shows on the network here, so
okay.
I don't mind plugging them because they're pretty, they're nice guys and, and nice people, and they're you know.
Yeah, sure. I'll have to catch it.
They're building up a network here at Area 22, so I'm I'm happy to be part of it. It's kind of like just a coincidence that we're like Lilug's meeting here, and I met them, and I wanted to do a show.
I love happy
and Paul's like, you got to connect with these guys. You know, you want to do what they do already, and I'm like, really? And like, you know, here you go. So
see, that's what I live for. I live for those moments of kismet. Serendipity, whatever, if you want to call it.
Yeah.
Of just
synchronicity.
Synchronicity.
Yeah.
I know you don't like the word synergy, but.
No, synergy!
Put that on your notepad. Synergy. No, synergy is a good word. But
you know, maybe we should drink as a cover
where
story.
Everything is just converging and the world is a beautiful, starry place.
Beautiful, starry place of a lot of strange coincidences.
Right.
Sometimes which don't work in your favor and which is frustrating. But if they do, divine intervention, awesome. Or at least some kind of universal, you know, force. I don't know. Everybody's got a different belief, so
exactly.
I don't want to.
Quantum energy.
Sun worship, if you prefer, whatever it is. So, what was that? Oh, it's self-deprecation. That's what I want to talk about.
Okay.
So, you do what I used to do. So, I got to warn you.
Used to do? Okay.
What I used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can self-deprecate.
You changed.
I did change. I will always make sure that I can make fun of me the best.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the best way to get out of it, to get into trouble, right? You just, you lean in on yourself and you can go for it. But I found it started to backfire. So, somewhere in my late 30s, early 40s, people were like, yeah, so you're just incompetent. They changed their tune. And people stopped underestimating me by default because of my age. And when that happened, then the advantage, you know, there's an advantage to self-deprecation, which is that, you know, people say, oh, okay, you know, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. They make a couple of mistakes. And, you know, when Napoleon said, never interrupt your enemy when they're making a mistake.
Oh.
Right?
Ooh.
So, you know, and I would just play it and let it go and say, yeah, I'm just a silly fool. I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
Talking out of turn in meetings and, you know, coming up with clever outs for things and Scottying my time estimate. And, you know, like in Star Trek, you know, Scotty would always say, Compton, it's going to take 2 hours.
That's right. And by the end of the episode, he freaking figured it out.
I've completely redesigned the Enterprise, you know. In 5 minutes, you know.
Like, I love Star Trek.
I thought you couldn't do that. What are you... You just lied to me.
You said this was
going to take a month. Yeah. So I would do that, and it started to backfire because I was just like people just didn't believe it anymore. They were like, you know what you're doing. You're up to something. So it kind of flipped around 180 on me and actually started working against me. So I don't know when it happened. It depended who it was. It was at different times, but sometime between mid-30s and now, I don't want to give too much information, but, you know, mid-30s and now, it flipped around. And
I know what you mean.
And so I'm like, well, hell, if I'm going to be the damn expert, I'm going to have my own freaking show. So now I flipped around to expert.
You know what? At some point, see... Again, I have my work life and my work world and that bubble, and then I have my personal life. So I'm probably more self-deprecating around my friends because they know I'm a goofball. Mm-hmm. But somewhere in my work world, I went from being the one who was like, can you help me? Please help me. I'm just silly. I'm just a girl. Or what? Even you know, I'm new. I'm the newbie. You know, show me. I went from that to actually developing an ego and saying, you know what? I'm the shit. I know what I'm talking about. So, you know,
to do it sometimes.
I worked hard. I did. It's not just that, okay, they bumped me up into management because, you know, I asked for it. I worked hard. I went for my certifications. I spent... Instead of, you know, doing, like today, I could be at the Howard Jones Show at the Paramount.
Right.
But I want to be here
my show?
Talking. Yeah, I really do. I want to be here talking
with
you.
You ditched Howard Jones for me, huh?
Howard Jones and Men Without Hats. They're playing.
Men Without Hats was my first
and Howard Jones.
Was my first record. Believe it or not,
Howard Jones was
Pop
my
goes
first
the world.
Real concert that
Pop
I was allowed
goes the
to
world.
Go to.
Men Without Hats was one of my first. Was
such,
one of my
such
first
good
singles.
Times. Good times.
One of my
right?
first vinyls. I should, probably shouldn't admit that. It was really early. I was a little kid, you know.
You could admit that. I think Safety Dance was probably the first Men Without Hats.
Have you seen
the video?
The literal video of that.
No.
So absolutely look up the literal video of Safety Dead.
Oh, God, that sounds fun.
We can't do it because we can't hear it, but it's phenomenal. You know what literal videos are? So it was this thing that was around 5 years ago or six years ago. I don't know, maybe it's even longer. Where people would watch videos from the 80s and redub new lyrics over the videos, and the lyrics would describe exactly what's happening in the video.
In the video. They're all dancing in a field?
And Safety Dance was the best one. It was
of course.
It was the leader.
Because
it's
that's
completely
a crazy
bananas.
Freaking video to begin with.
Just a girl comes up and goes, and then she goes,
so happy.
I'm insane! They go in like waves. The copyright take it down, and then, you know, like 3 months later when no one thinks they're paying attention, it pops back up.
Good.
It's whack-a-mole. So it's great. I got it now. So if nothing else, I could send it to you or something. But, you know, it's really funny. Yeah.
I like watching stuff like that. That kind of...
That's so good. They're so funny.
But getting back to me working hard to get where I am, I mean, I go to meetups. I go to security events. I, like, submerge myself in the field. Mm-hmm. Now, I know I don't know everything. I know I have weaknesses in my
Why
background.
Not? Yeah. Nobody knows everything.
Exactly.
It's a quick way to figure out someone's a liar if they tell you they know everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But but I learned not to put myself down, and that's really an important lesson.
It's a weird middle-aged...
It's an important lesson.
I don't know if this is like a middle-aged thing, or if it's just an IT middle-aged thing, or if it's
a life thing. It's a life thing, because some people still haven't learned. They are their harshest critics, and they...
The microphone. I'm
going to
come back over there.
You invoked the microphone troll. You made him angry.
Me and my gestures. Let me play with the toy.
When he is sleep deprived from going to school and engineering at the same time.
Yeah. I'm sleep deprived from engineering all the time.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm sleep deprived too, believe it or not. I know you said
you missed your show, didn't you?
You get 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night.
Watch
you said.
Show.
Yeah, I watched your show.
And I, you know, talk to anybody at Island Labs. They know that I pull all nighters. I pull all nighters from time to time, because I feel the pressure to do everything.
Yeah, we've talked about that at
Slicing
too.
And one of my faults, I guess, and I shouldn't admit it in public, but it's that I fail to complete projects. I have such passion and such energy and such verve in the beginning, I might be able to see something three quarters of the way through. Well,
right.
I can't say that I get bored with it. I just other things come up.
Do you watch Rick and Morty?
Yes, of course. Oh. Absolutely.
The one where
one guess, it doesn't watch Rick and Morty.
I don't know. It was Rick and Morty.
I love the Meeseeks episode.
Oh, that's great. I have a Meeseeks shirt.
Oh.
I walk around. It was one of my favorite shirts. I have a Meeseeks shirt. I'm Mr. Meeseeks.
Oh,
look
man.
At me.
The devil
episode where he's
haven't seen them all. I've seen.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen everything, but
so
I know.
Let's
I've
just
seen
say. A, let's I, just say there's an episode where Rick starts a business.
Most of season one.
And then he accomplishes some lofty psychological goal from his business. He says,
okay,
I'm bored, and he lights the place on fire and walks out. I've done
that. That's it. It's like I dropped a project where it's like, this is why
it's the curse
can't
of intelligence.
Be a programmer. Because for a program, you have to complete the coding.
Right.
I mean, I, you know, took programming in school, and I went through the exercises in the book, but I'll tell you what, the closer I got to the harder exercises, the more tendency for me to just drop the exercise.
Right.
I got the gist of it. I can read it. That's
good. You know, at some point this comes down to open source.
Logic.
It comes down to open source and the psychology behind it, and it's just when people write good code when they're scratching their own personal itch, when they're solving their own problem. So you're not really solving your problem. problem, you're solving problems in the book.
Mm-hmm.
When you got to that point, the right next step, and this is just not for you, this is for everybody. If you're in programming, if you're trying to get into programming and you're able to get to the book and you've gotten through two-thirds of it and you're getting bored with the exercises, mm-hmm. that's telling you something. But it's not telling you quit and programming isn't for you. Mm-hmm. It's telling you, okay, now it's time to try to solve a problem of my own with what I know of the code.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then just go back and switch it from a learning volume to a reference volume. Right? And just go back and check things when you need to know it. So
Right.
Well, so you didn't do anything wrong.
No,
you
just, I didn't do anything wrong because I carry that with me. And I always say, hey, I can read a program. And not too many people can.
Right. Yeah, no, that's good. Can you debug other people's code? Can you help with that?
No, I can't.
Oh, okay.
Nope. I've drifted far from there.
Okay. So I think here we go. Do you want a drink or?
Sure, but I prefer the white if that's okay.
No, sorry, my bad.
You go for the red.
I'll go for the red. You go for the white. Why would we just switch our glasses? Because you don't know which one has the iodine powder in it. Princess Bride reference. Awesome.
Yes, Wallace Shawn.
Yep. You're right, that is the red. I am a total dullard when it comes to wine. I know nothing. I literally made this logo, and then Isaac's like, is there going to be drink alcohol on the show?
I thought there was a martini.
It was supposed to be a martini.
Where's the olive?
I don't even know how to make a martini, so I just brought wine, and then he's like, well, I'll do wine.
Nice.
So now wine's a shtick. So now we do wine.
Yes, I'll have some wine. I'll have a sippy poo.
All right. So, Stop trying to get drunk.
I'm not there yet.
There's mischief from here in the booth. So this is good. So the reason I asked about DevOps, coming all the way back around to that, is because I had an idea about, do you guys use it at all or no?
Yes.
You do use it. So do you have a Kanban board or what do you
do? Yes, but I'm not in that area. I know. It sounds crazy.
Well, if you don't need it, you don't need it. I mean,
I
it's supposed
it,
to make
right.
your life easier. So.
I mean, we have, there's definitely DevOps area. They're going into Azure and AWS more, mm-hmm. so but I leave that up to that.
Well, so
team.
So this goes into the broader picture,
okay.
like why cybersecurity is so popular right now. So I think one of the things is this all goes back to Snowden,
yes.
and General Alexander yes. covering his ass when Snowden got. When Snowden happened,
mm-hmm.
you know, because he was the guy in charge. He was the general in charge of the NSA at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically said, "You can't trust admins."
I see.
And which I thought that was great. I was like, "Oh, that's wonderful." You know, but actually,
well, they are the ones with privilege access. Right?
They are the ones with privilege access, right? So he basically wanted to change the whole model so that you didn't have to trust the admins anymore. So the thing that So cybersecurity by creating layers around everything was the solution. But the problem is, I think that putting so many layers up, I think the cybersecurity departments are becoming at least as big as, if not larger than, the previous ops and dev departments. And you know, they have so many layers in between each layer of the onion.
Yep.
That they so it's not cheap. It's not free.
Nope.
So the reason I wanted to bring that up is just, you know, so you're prepared. Like
I've seen.
I could see it swinging the other way at some point. I think at some point they're going to hit some number they're going to hit or some ratio you know, and they're just gonna, well, I'm sure cyber fights with. Meeting with the other departments and meetings and stuff.
Cyber
says,
yes and no.
You can't do this.
No, you can't. Well,
and they say, well, that's the only way.
The thing is, now
we have this budget and these
now
resources.
We're entering an environment where we can't say no. Cyber is entering an environment where we cannot say no.
There it is.
We have to.
The pendulum swinging the other way.
We have to adapt to technology as it's moving quicker and quicker. So, as you know, I'm in healthcare. There's telemedicine that's coming in.
Right.
There's IoT devices and stuff that we don't have security applications to monitor.
Right.
Alexa. A doctor puts Alexa in his
his office. Now think about it. This
it's
is happening.
Disaster.
This is happening today. How do you secure
don't
a PHI?
Do that.
No, but doctors want it. Listen, they're the ones bringing in the money.
Play hole and hole.
They get to call the shots and
tell the world about my patient's AIDS case.
Exactly. How do you secure that? How do
you don't
exactly
with closed source? It's completely
we are
it's connected to the entire internet
after I don't know, a ghost, whatever you want to say. We're chasing after something that
we're chasing
our
tail.
Roadrunner, beep beep. Right.
Well, there's no internet of things standardization at all.
No, none at all.
It's gross. I mean, it's really gross because you know there's most of those devices run Linux. You know how many security flaws
or
there
embedded,
are on Linux?
There's like medical devices.
Yeah, there's some
embedded
OSs, right?
Yeah.
But even then, you need a patch path for the duration.
Right.
Of a, if you're selling something that you expect to last for 20 years, you need a patch path for 20 fucking years.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And a lot of the vendors, because it was developed, like you said, 20 years ago, they are slow to come up with fixes because nobody needed them before.
Right, right.
And also the FDA regulates certain medical devices.
Well, at least there's some kind of regulation at all. Most devices aren't like Alexa. There's no regulation
at all. But a lot of times they don't want you to touch it. They're like, oh, nope, you can't put anything on this. It's like, but it's got a known vulnerability.
Right.
It's going to take down the hospital, but, oh, okay, don't patch it, don't fix it, leave it as is. Segment it.
Yep, that's what you have to do.
The only way to do it is you segment it.
You put a secure machine in front of it, and you just hope nobody ever gets to the secure machine because it's toast. Yep. Yeah, that's my recommended policy if for people at home if they're looking at security systems, because those do run Linux usually. Mm-hmm. Definitely don't put it on the internet, even if they offer it as a feature where you can log in your cell phone or whatever, or have it record to the cloud, or you know, don't do that. Isolate it behind another device and secure the other device, and that way you don't have to worry about whether you're patching it well or not. Because there have been security camera botnets, you know.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, but do the common people know how to do all of it?
I kind of sidetracked you. You were talking more about, maybe not. You know, internet connection sharing and hotspots are becoming more familiar to people. You know, I guess this is kind of the point of the show. You know, so if you don't know what internet connection sharing is, that's where you have an isolated network that has a one single real facing IP to one network and has a subnet of fake IPs to another network. So, and what it does is it forces all the packets to go through the one machine. And you can typically firewall that machine. That creates a choke point where you have, you know, where you're forcing all traffic that's going to go to this other network behind here. And it's very simple. Most people can do it. Most Windows, Linux, I don't know if OS X does it, but definitely I should know that because I guess I gotta get another OS X machine just to answer that. And Android definitely do it. So so if you're running any of those operating systems, you should be able to create a bridge machine. Remember, Raspberry Pi, $37. You can has two network ports. Plug one network cable in, the other one in, and you have an isolation for your machine. Make sure to patch the Pi though, because otherwise you defeat the purpose.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, it sucks because now you have to hop and, you know, it's not so easy to be able to view the videos on it. You know, whatever service they built into it, just don't use them.
No.
You know, it's not worth it. It's not worth the risk because you're literally putting a video of your most private stuff at risk, of your private space. So, I don't know, is that fair? Am I being too paranoid?
I'm paranoid too. I struggle with my own backup process, you know.
Right.
I refuse to back up to the cloud, which makes more...
Awesome.
Which means I buy more physical external hard drives.
I'm with you.
And
I don't think... Well,
I have to take the time to back things up manually. I guess I could create synchronizations, too, but I'm OCD in that respect.
Right, right.
It also forces me to purge files. I mean, things that I don't need to keep around forever. But then I get paranoid that, oh, this is a physical drive with a life of 5 years. What happens when that dies? You know?
Right, right.
So
Well, typically you can safely double it on average, and you'll probably be okay. But you know, not as a policy in a company.
These are administrative tasks that I think either maybe cause they're more time consuming than perhaps they should be.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could just snap my fingers.
Well, so don't feel too bad. So I thought I was parent. I've had both sides of it. I've had people totally back me up and be like, yeah, putting anything in the cloud is suicide. You know, it's
all
about
my personal stuff.
Yeah, well, but
you
no.
You put the company stuff in the cloud. I'll help you secure that.
Well, I'm not going to say which institution, but I've been in an institution where our redundancy strategy is, well, if it's that bad, humanity's doomed anyway. We don't care.
Humanity is doomed. We knew that walking in here. Humanity is doomed.
Is that why you got the dinosaur mug?
Yes, to remind me of where we're going.
Where we're going.
Facing extinction.
Hopefully later rather than sooner.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully.
At least there should be a first wave off the planet. Yeah, I'm sure there's other aliens who feel exactly the opposite about that.
Yeah, how old are your kids?
So they're 8 and 12. So.
Okay, so maybe your 8-year-old will live to 60, and everything, and the weather will not change drastically.
Or maybe they'll be off planet when it,
Oh, yeah. You're one of those.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I
Jetsons.
Well, I mean, a space elevator is just a matter of materials, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a big nanotech guy.
Yes,
I haven't heard me talk about it too much here, but I've been in nanotech panels. I wrote a sci-fi book on nanotech. So, I mean, we're there. I mean, it's happening now. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if my book hit the news tomorrow. Like, we're there. You know, all the pieces that or would possibly go public are public. So it's just the private pieces I don't know about. So in that sense, nanomaterials, I mean, they could do carbon nanotubules of human scale lengths, right? You know, talking about 1 nanometer, basically 1 molecule thick.
Okay.
And that's the material that you need to do a space elevator. So at
and
that
what
point,
what is a space elevator? I'm thinking.
Oh, you don't
like
know what
some,
a space.
Yeah, I'm thinking like,
exactly,
is this like an elevator going into space.
When you take a bucket and you spin it around.
Yes.
And then the water stays in it.
Yes.
That's exactly what a space elevator is. You're literally building. The hardest part is building the initial cord, and then it needs to be strong enough to hold the strength. But eventually, the spin of the Earth will hold the cable holding the space elevator all the way up into non-gravity affected space.
Ah.
And then you can literally just hop on an elevator and go up.
And we'll live in. Yeah.
And once you do that, getting off the planet's easy, right?
But then how do you,
you don't have to waste
life and.
Well, you don't have to waste any energy getting materials or fuel or anything up there. So then it's just a matter of, okay, where do we go? Right, even without warp fields or any kind of unknown technologies.
I mean,
but you can do the experiments now for cheap because you can just get the stuff up there and okay, let's build a spaceship. That's wrong. Let's build another. It becomes building hot rods instead of building the most expensive thing a civilization's ever built. Instead of building the pyramids, building hot rods, you're going to get better hot rods.
First we have to get humanity to get all aligned and on the same page, and that's another thing.
So we are on the same page for some things.
Like what?
Like we
you
all breathe. We all eat.
We do.
Well, most people eat. Not everyone does. That's a problem. But I think for the most part, people see that as a problem, at least in the Western world. So this is subject of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right?
Yes.
But we have that, right? That was the 60s. People forget that this was like, this stuff is pretty new.
Okay.
Psychology is pretty new. Marketing,
right.
The marketing application of psychology is pretty new. I mean, the really bad application, the Nazis creating propaganda out of Freud stuff, basically. That's how that worked. Was not that long ago. We have these tools are all being built up so that we understand ourselves and then we can understand, okay, it's hard to think about the bigger problems of humanity unless I have food in my belly and a roof over my head.
Right.
So, and I think.
And sex. Don't forget. That's the bottom. Maslow's
eventually.
Pyramid. That's the base need right there.
No, that's not what I'm
food, sex, shelter.
No,
yes, it is.
No,
I took psychology.
No, that wasn't what. Well, all right.
We have to propagate.
Sex is not in the pyramid. I'm pretty. Yeah. It's an important need to people, but. Maybe we could put it in there. That would be fun, but no. Food, clothing, shelter, that kind of basic stuff. When you have that stuff out of the way, then you can start to think about other people. So we need to get the planet, the people on the planet, to that point where they have food, clothing, shelter, and they know if, so long as they're part of society in at least some loose-fitting way, if they're trying to be part of society, they're going to get that stuff. And if we get to that point, I think then we...
But do you think everybody will be on board to want to live in space? I think that's where I was going
So the question is, who do you send to space, right?
Exactly.
And so the easy answer is whoever the aliens pick, right?
Oh, come on.
or whoever the Matrix designates, or whoever God picks, whatever one of those supernatural things, right? But let's say it's up to us, right? That's probably the saner answer anyway. So if it's just us, we're trying to figure out who to send to space. It's a big question because, you know, we have to quantify what we think good attributes of humanity are, and that's really, it's a slippery slope. It's really hard to determine that because what's good in one situation may be bad in another. You know, a leader in one situation is a follower
in
another.
Absolutely.
Right.
Like
so
all of those zombie apocalypse type of things.
Right.
Show.
Right. That's a great example.
Lost and Walking Dead.
You know, the first one to get eaten might be the corporate manager. Right. You know,
exactly.
He was the king.
Was the leader.
He was the king in the old world, and he's fooling the new one. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I love how in the movie Zombieland, you get this nerdy, puny protagonist
who lives by five
rules, right? To stay alive. And one of them is just kind of keep moving, keep running, stay active. You got to outrun them at some point.
Right.
I don't remember what the other four are, but they, each one made sense.
Right. Well, it was interesting because they had a really good commentary with Bill Murray, who is completely encased in zombies.
In his world,
he just used his acting skill.
And
he did it too good, and that's what... Sorry, spoilers.
Uh-oh.
That's what got him killed, right? You know, he just acted too well.
But that was his skill. That was his survival skill.
What?
1 month.
1 month. 1 month. Warned you.
Oh, that's been more than a month. That's how years now.
Yeah, it's many years. Yeah.
But
I bought it on DVD and watched it. So you know.
DVD.
Yeah. I like DVDs. I keep physical copies of all the stuff that I listen to, that I watch.
I like CDs.
I have an epic
choose.
CD tower. I have an epic, it's a spinning tower because it wasn't enough to have one dimension. I need a multi-dimension epic CD tower. So
I beat that. I have a wall of CDs.
Nice.
I was a DJ. I don't know if you know that about
me. No? You're a DJ?
Yes. I was a DJ in my 20s.
No. You're always a DJ once you're a DJ.
Yeah, I guess you're right because I still do parties.
Right.
But I don't know if we should be talking about that
now. No, that's fine. Go ahead.
If you don't mind.
It's
something I enjoyed
very
much.
What kind of music? Any kind of music? Or
when I spun in a club, it was 80s and punk. Indie, 90s indie rock, I guess you would
that's
say.
That's awesome. How did I not know this about you?
I thought you did.
I didn't. That's why I love this show. I love this show. This is so great.
I thought you did.
I hope you're enjoying this as much as I am because this is awesome.
It's something I did. And again, I was a female doing a predominantly male thing, right? So I guess it was kind of hot. It was kind of cool. I just enjoyed the pleasure of playing the music that I love and sharing that, but also on a good night when people were dancing, there's some power that you have as a DJ. You know what goes into what song, what'll make a smooth transition, and you know what'll get people really ecstatic to the point where there's more people coming on the floor, screaming, pipping, and then, you know, the ebb and the flow. Then you throw something slow on and they evacuate. You give them a chance to go get drinks at the bar.
Right.
So there's an art to it.
Nice, right. So, how do you know you were winning? How do you know you were doing the best?
Well,
what was the best DJing?
Winning was having fun. There was no... The metric was seeing
Conquest.
People having a good time.
Right.
You know, in 98, there was a place in Massapequa called the My Room Lounge that I spun at, and I got my own night, so maybe that was winning, because
then it was winning.
My stuff. I didn't, you know, have to
share. Okay.
To me, winning is breathing and staying above ground. Okay.
Right.
When you think about it.
Don't be a zombie. Keep running.
Exactly. but sharing joys, like with especially turning people on to music.
Right.
Who they'll dig a song. They'll come up to me. They're like, "Who does this? Who's singing this? I want to get this."
Do you write any music or play any instruments or anything?
Unfortunately, no. I took violin for 3 years and
Did you enjoy it?
I actually did enjoy it, but I was poo-pooed by my parents, who didn't enjoy my practicing.
I played the drums. They didn't like it.
I wish I played the drums. My parents.
They blocked me when I was younger.
But I am a huge appreciator of music, all kinds. There's only good and bad.
Just knowing
like
how to change
Jones
tempos
said.
And flow one song into another.
Right,
and
the beat,
and
the syncopation.
And knowing how to keep that
right.
energy alive on the dance floor, that's tough, you know.
I don't think it's tough. I just
it
think
is.
It's something.
It is. There's a lot of bad DJs out there right now. Sorry, guys. There's a lot of bad DJs.
I have heard bad DJs. To me,
if you can go up to a DJ and make recommendations, and it always kills better than whatever the hell they're doing, that's a bad DJ.
Right. Or DJs who just don't know how to make it flow. Like, you can actually hear the end of the one song and the beginning of another, or just a cacophony. It's like they're playing them both at the same time.
Right.
And then there's one thing I never learned. I tried to beat match, but there's masters in electronica who can sample and beat match, and
Well, the very best of them became dubstep people, so, you know, writing their own electronic
stuff,
music.
Then that becomes,
becomes an entry to becoming a musician.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're creating something new.
It was like a whole new avenue that nobody took into account. Were you like more focusing on your career at that point? Is that why you got away from it?
No.
I feel like if you had kept in it, you would have like gone further. That's why.
I think with the DJing, it was getting in the way of my waking up in the morning and going to my real job.
Oh, you were moonlighting.
I was moonlighting. Of course, I couldn't.
Okay.
I mean, I got paid for my DJ gigs, but I couldn't make it on the money I was paid.
Right.
Especially one night a week. It was an act of love. It was something that
I think everybody. The best gift you can give your kids. Especially if they're smart. Everyone thinks their kids are smart, so I can't really quantify that in any way. But everyone's kids are smart, but everyone thinks their kids are smart. But especially if your kids are smart, the best gift you can give your kids is just to give them a little bit of space to experiment and to try to find themselves and be what they want to be. You know,
try
a little of this, try a little of that.
Experience.
I mean, like look at Steve Jobs. You know, he spent all this time on typeface. How stupid is that?
Font? Really?
On fonts. And that was one of the keys to his success with Apple.
That's why it's beautiful.
Because he spent so much time on aesthetics.
Interesting.
So he was a technical-minded person, but he spent a lot of time on aesthetics, and then that lent itself to a whole other computer platform that competed with the international technical monster that was IBM. That wasn't easy to do.
No, not at that time.
And it's because he was a polymath and he had specialties in different fields. So I'm a huge fan of that.
I wish I was. I consider
myself. We're going to start a polymath line on the show.
Let's do it. Oh,
yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, because I mean, we just have technocrats in the past, and it's time for some polymath. So.
Well, I consider myself I wouldn't say polymath, but a Renaissance person.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
I think
polymath. I'm probably abusing the word. I can hear someone yelling at me in my head right now, but.
No,
I think that's the right usage.
But I switched careers too. I switched majors. I switched careers. I'm a curious person. So
what was your original major?
I went to school twice, but I first majored in communication.
Okay.
And English.
Mm-hmm.
And I love languages. Being that Greek, I learned Greek and English at the same time.
Right.
So I had an ear for...
Can you flip like this?
No, not anymore.
Not anymore. But you could at one point? Or?
Yeah, at one point. In fact, my father had to stop speaking to me in Greek because my relatives didn't understand. My American relatives couldn't understand me.
Right, right.
So then in seventh grade, I selected Italian as a language because you were supposed to pick up on a foreign language.
Right, right.
And I selected that because my mother is Italian and she wanted me to learn the heritage, even though I had no one to speak with.
Right.
But I excelled there. I actually won a few awards. I continued with Italian until college. So I was almost pretty fluent there, too. Reading in Italian and understanding stories.
Right.
Then, because I wanted to expand my horizons in high school, I picked up on French. So I took a little bit of French, too. And I always thought I was going to go the route of being like a diplomat or working for the UN as a translator and traveling.
Wow, that's interesting.
I wanted that. But then when I had to pick a major in college, it became a little bit tougher.
Mm-hmm.
And having a very...
It's a better market for jobs and computers.
In the 90s, oh yeah, well, that was definitely now, but you know, when I was in school in the 90s, my father just wanted me to have a job and he felt like business was the way to go.
So
he
pressured, you had a business major
exactly,
originally. Yeah.
You know this. So
right.
That's where I first learned failure because I'm sorry, it sucks that it had to happen that way, but it is.
Yeah.
I have to. I'm going to brag a little bit.
I failed really well. I'm a pro at failing. I'm the best failure of all.
Yes, and I will fail again and again.
I'm right there with
and
you.
And again.
I'm there with you. That's all I know.
So, I hated to disappoint my father, but God damn it, try as I might, I couldn't get an A in macroeconomics, microeconomics, and all that boring shit that I didn't even comprehend at the time. You know why? Because it was just an abstract theory in a book, and it made no sense in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
When I graduated and I got into the business world, then it was like, aha, now I know why they made me study management and marketing and all this stuff, because now it makes sense. But, you know...
Does that help you, having that background?
I think it does. It actually,
cool.
Pounding that management
it seems relevant.
Stuff, it is. I mean, you educate yourself no matter what. Whether you get a degree, a diploma, it doesn't matter, because reading a book should stay with you. You know, experiencing something, that should stay with you. It's all learning and education, as long as you take it the right way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
but I guess, you know, I don't want to go on and on.
Well, you
got to
take everything with a grain of salt, right? You know?
Right, right. That's true nowadays, too, with the sources of where you're...
So the thing is, so
reading.
On the one hand, you have sources, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, you have... So it's great to, you know, the principle is simple. You're just letting other people, smart people who have figured stuff out, show you what they figured out.
Yeah.
And it's saves you a lot of time, right?
Uh-huh.
But on the other hand, there's a risk. And this is something that continues to confound me. And it amazes me that people like, I'm like, I thought you were science people. I just want to yell at people sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that some people are liars.
Oh,
And also, sometimes things are missed. Things are complicated or expensive or hard to replicate, and things get missed.
Hmm.
And so facts, things that are treated as facts, can be very, very thin.
Like, give an example.
Like, leeches. Leeches were hard science at one point.
Oh, right. Used to cure, or, you know,
draw
blood. Mm-hmm.
Exposing people to disease. Through intentionally infecting them
mm-hmm.
was hard science at one point. the ether.
God.
Space being filled with the ether. Was
right.
Hard science at one point.
Right, right.
So this, the science fails.
It's so funny, yeah.
You know, and you know, and sometimes it's wrong, and that's, you know, it's just a, it's not that, science never fails. I don't want to say that science fails.
An interpretation at that time.
Right, right. It's just like, this is the best that we can do experimentation-wise. It isn't necessarily a lack of rigor. Sometimes it's just a lack of just statistics, just numbers, just having enough experimental opportunities, right? Not every experiment's easy. Some experiments are unethical. You know, it's not really ethical to experiment
on
people, right? You know, so you can only work with the data you've got. You don't really have a good control.
Correct.
You know, sometimes it's expensive to reproduce experiments like in, say, particle physics. So there's a lot of maybes in particle physics. That's why everyone's still arguing over string theory. Hmm. You know, so a lot of people are still arguing over the quantum stuff because, you know. So yeah, I mean, I like those examples because they're old and they're things that people can easily understand. But there are newer ones too.
Right, of course, we're living it somewhere in our lives.
Right, and it once in a while, you know. Another thing, like, people tend to trust authority a lot. People tend to trust the justice system and the police a lot. And, you know, usually they're honest. Usually they're doing a good job. Usually they're doing their best job. But sometimes genetics exonerates someone who is a slam dunk conviction. What happened there?
Mm.
Yeah, maybe that's a little sign that the system's not as perfect as people hoped it was.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, there's plenty of examples of that, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think you kind of get it.
Oh, yeah, now I get it. I get what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of people, and a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, we all established... We're all working off the same established facts. And actually, I think the right thing to do is to encourage people, well, find out the fact-finding process and replicate it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Not every time, because it's too expensive to do it every time. You go crazy.
You go crazy
and you go broke. But just pick one here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you find someone's not being, their integrity is low, move on. That would be what I would say.
Right, there's a lot of liars.
If there's a lot of liars. Psychopaths are 1-3% of the population, and that's pretty hard science. You know, they lie.
Oh, my God.
They're not...
That means I might have dated one.
You know, probably. For sure there's been some in some of your classrooms.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, and I'm not trying to be mean, and I'm not trying to harp on this, but I mean, you know, this is like we were talking about before with sexual harassment and, you know, the propensity for people on the spectrum, on the autistic spectrum, to be in IT. Well, you know, people on the autistic spectrum sometimes stare at girls, you know, and next thing you know, everybody's litigious and everybody's got a lawyer and HR's involved and it's a whole hoopla when you could have just cracked a joke and they would have went, oh, I'm staring? Because they didn't know.
Because they didn't realize it.
Right.
Stating the obvious to anybody, spectrum or not, is sometimes disarming, I guess.
Right, right.
It's sometimes necessary to state the obvious.
To me, society is the space in which we all find a middle ground. So, yeah, I mean, like, I'm kind of coming back around to that thing you were saying before about, like, is humanity doomed or are we all screwed? You know.
Maybe I'm just cynic now.
Well, no. I mean, but, like, I think, yes, we could totally burn out and fail, for sure. That failure is on the table. But, I also really think that we could succeed. Like, one of the things, like a lot of people like to talk about climate change. I'm sorry, I don't want to get too political, but...
No, it's okay.
A lot of people are... You know, I'm going to say something that doesn't really matter whether you think climate change is being accurately represented by the majority of the scientific community or not.
Hmm.
It doesn't really matter. To me, the real measure is if you can measure predictable results... like, if you can say, okay, we're going to be at this and we're going to be at that later. Like, prediction is a very powerful mechanism to determine if someone understands a problem, right? If they can make predictions. They don't have to be dead bang on, but they should ballpark at least some of the time. And if they don't ballpark, you should be able to explain why. So, if you can ballpark things, then you can work on geoengineering.
Mm-hmm.
And there are geoengineering methodologies that are safe, like one of my favorites is sea salt spraying. So the question, the thing that comes to my mind whenever anybody's talking about climate change is not whether it's real or not, is, hey, can we come up with some metrics to do sea salt spraying? Right? You say it's going to go up 2 degrees, so we know we have a baseline. We know what the expectation over 20 years is going to be. So let's try to bring it back down half a degree over 5 years. And we know how much reflection we're going to need. What sea salt spraying does is it sprays seawater up into the air, mm-hmm. and then it reflects sunlight off the planet, and the net effect is cooling the planet.
Ah.
Doesn't really have any effect on, you know, if you do it in a tight enough area, it can saturate the air, so it's just like you're creating a little more cloud cover, but not a lot more, you know.
It's a
fairly safe thing to do.
Understood. There's a lot of safe solutions out there.
Right.
Even in cleaning up our waters of plastic.
I've done that like 8 times. Sorry. Oh, okay. Sorry, keep going.
Even in cleaning our oceans of plastics, I've seen, you know, through some reels, there's startups that are they're trying to do something. So,
mm-hmm.
so all right,
you don't have to wait.
Let me dial it back.
In the Linux space, do we wait for people to tell us to do it?
When I was once very optimistic, mm-hmm. I used, like, if somebody asked me, do I believe in God? I used to say, I believe in man.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, if we can dream it, we can do it.
Right.
And that could go either way. We can do good or we can do bad.
Right.
And I hope that we do good. I've seen so much.
So you're not fate is in our stars, it's in ourselves. You're in an ourselves person instead of in our stars. That famous quote from Caesar, you know, our fate is not in
from
Julius Caesar from the play from Shakespeare. Our fate is not in our stars, but in ourselves.
So
you're in our ourselves camp.
I guess so.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess so. Yeah. Right. I don't know. Yes and no. It depends on the day that you get me. For the most part, I do feel like we drive our destiny.
Right.
But then there's the kismet serendipity moments when
right.
I'm just like, wow, there's a force that's aligning with me.
Right.
But
it's weird, right?
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. There are.
I think some of that.
These wondrous moments, and
I think some of that really is.
I wanted
humans.
To say achievements such as man going to the moon.
Right.
If you believe in that, I do.
Yeah,
I believe that.
I'm ready to fight over that one.
We had a computer with what? How many?
Yeah.
What was it? Like, you know, a couple kilobits. A very short memory, a small memory in this very large supercomputer that sent astronauts up into space.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's just wonderful. Who did that? We did that.
Right.
So marvels like that show me that we can dig ourselves out of this hole that we're in.
We did that bottom up. We didn't. That wasn't even top-down programming. That was bottom
up
programming. That's the harder kind of programming.
There has to be incentives and motivation, the right type.
Right.
But there are people out there who are trying to make change. Sea salt spraying I don't know. I mean, there's so much out there. There's other countries that are trying
right.
different technologies, reusing, recycling, not wasting as much. Minimalism is the trend now, and
right.
I'm actually trying to get on that wagon because I have acquired so much and accumulated all those CDs.
Well, at some point, it becomes practical.
My wall of CDs. Do I need them? You know,
right,
these
right.
are the things. What if I just, you know, go to SoundCloud or Pandora? My music's there.
Right.
But I like touching it, the tangible, the aesthetic. So,
right,
you know,
right.
we're caught in this.
I thought I was pulling rank on you with my CD tower. I had no idea.
And then what about records?
It's a very big CD tower.
I also love vinyl. Or LPs, I'll call them.
Right.
I inherited my aunt. Laura's collection, and my mother gave me her collection.
Wow.
Mostly from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Just real classic music. There's nothing like listening to Peggy Lee on a Sunday. That's all I gotta say.
Nice.
You know, stuff like that. I feel like I don't want to lose that. I don't mm-hmm. want to lose the sound that the record makes when the needle hits it, that little pop hiss.
Yeah.
You don't get that with the electronic
age. Well, I bet this is, you talk about synchronicities, I think a lot of humanity's successes come from our own minds and our own subconscious, and a lot of that comes from emotional memory and and remembering when you feel the way you felt, it brings you to a place that you've maybe not been before in a while, at least not in a rational way, maybe in your dreams, but not when you're awake. And actually you can create a larger scope of intelligence by making that, by creating a mood with music, you know, or a mood with anything.
Absolutely.
You know, you can set paths for yourself that maybe you wouldn't have set on your own. So
I often wonder how I guess the millennials view things that came before them, like things from our generation.
Right.
Some of them, when they discover it, they just cling to it and they try to emulate it. Mm-hmm. There's some great bands in Brooklyn that are probably playing now that sound exactly like Duran Duran.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, how is it that they sound so... Oh, because they never experienced Duran Duran, but they picked up an album, they enjoyed the music,
right,
and now this is the kind of music they want, you know, to offspring.
Right.
So it's crazy. And Nirvana. How about the waves Nirvana made? That,
right.
That blows my mind, because when I was experiencing it from the 90s, I thought it was just another band of the time.
Right.
I never thought that they were
clearly the genre leader at the time. They made the 90s, basically.
And
yeah.
Afterwards. So.
Yeah, yeah. So they actually I went on a cross country trip.
Mm-hmm.
I bring this up every episode, yep. Something different.
I did too, but
you did?
In 2000. Yeah,
oh,
we talked about this.
We did?
So, a little bit. We have talked about this, because I asked you what route you went, and I told you how I went south and then came through the middle.
Maybe I was asking you where you went so that I could figure out what I was going to do. So you did tell me yours, but I hadn't done mine yet.
Yeah, but you actually had a lot longer than I did, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well,
I had to do it
our honeymoon in New Zealand, it was brutal.
Awesome.
It was just like boom, 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 and it was like, oh, this sucks. Let's not do that again.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the time.
Yeah,
you know,
this time, right?
I had the time this time. So, and we ended up in Aberdeen, Washington.
Ooh,
that's where
I've never been.
Kurt Cobain.
Yep, the home
grew up, and that's where he nurtured himself. That nurtured him into becoming. They love him there.
Yeah, and
not,
is it like a?
They have Kurt Cobain quotes up
course,
on plaques and stuff, and
is it still that dirgy type of environment?
Mm-hmm.
I think of it being like...
I don't even want to like say too much, because I don't want to give it away, because it's like magical.
I've seen so
it
many
really
documentaries.
Is like, I didn't even think I liked grunge that much, and it's really magical being there.
Yeah,
it's really like... I mean, it's kind of like... It can be dark and gloomy and foggy,
yeah,
and it can be sunny, but, you know, so the mood changes, but it's always good.
You know...
People are silly and fun there. I really like that.
Parallel that with Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
And how their music came about in an industrial, dirgy type of town.
Yeah.
And it's so heavy, their sound, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
parallel
that.
Yeah, that's weird.
Where you grow up and what you see, it makes you.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
I always don't...
Well, people are a product of their time.
I don't like to admit that I'm from Long Island a lot of times.
Right.
North Shore, but... but it made me, you know,
yeah.
It definitely molded me in certain ways.
So I actually wrote science fiction on this, talking about how I forget what book it was now. Sorry, whoever the author was, I apologize.
I know.
But talking about the advantages to suburbia and the frustration, just like the Puritarians' frustration with sex.
Yes.
Yeah, it creates like this kind of work ethic drive that, like, you know, sometimes makes a society more successful. You know, having being stuck in suburbia and not being able to travel just motivates you to succeed. You're like, I need to have a good car and good insurance and fuel always, or I'm doomed. And there's a budget that goes with that, and
it lights a fire under your ass. For me, it was, I have to get out of this town and brush this town off my... It was the whole It's a Wonderful Life syndrome,
right,
where I got to get out of Bedford Falls, and
a car is freedom. Actually,
yeah,
it's funny, you know, this is going to be really weird, because it's going to seem like I'm kissing a little butt here, but I'm not. I swear I'm not. So I actually read Dee Schneider's book.
Cool.
He wrote a book about dealing with being a teenager.
On Long Island. Oh,
and
I should read
when
it.
He was, it was a whole chapter about just isolating yourself in your car. And honestly,
whoa,
I was like, yeah, that's it right there. When
whoa,
you're fighting with your family, you get in your car and you just drive around the block and they don't know where you are. Because, of course, you know, this is before cell phones. So now they can just call you. But it worked then.
Right, right.
You know, and you just, that's it. You can be alone and you have time to cool off and think about
right,
it and meditate and, you
right,
know, maybe read a book or something. And it was awesome advice, and it was very helpful. It got me out of trouble a couple times. So, but you know, you need money, you need to keep a car. So I substituted.
I took a bicycle. For me, it was I don't have a car. Bike as far from my mom as I can get right now.
We biked all over Nassau County. It was crazy. We bicycled all over the place. It was the amount of bicycling we did was. Seriously, like our parents would have plopped if they realized how far we went. We made it to Queens.
Right. But
we made it halfway to Suffolk.
Wasn't that exciting too? Because you are crossing that line.
Awesome.
You are like, I'm not supposed to go past here, but I'm gonna blow it, you know. And she's not gonna. They're not gonna know.
Right.
And then you just return home for dinner. What did you do? Nothing.
Went around the block. You know, went over to 7-Eleven, got a Slurpee.
Went to the library. But meanwhile, you had your own adventure.
Yeah.
And you got to, you know, reset.
Right. Yeah. Well, but that's part of what growing up is. You know, the kids are always testing the boundaries. Just like the infant throws
a
cereal on the ground. You know, when you're a teenager, you're like, yeah, I don't care what you say. I'm going to be on the hook for myself in 2 years. I better work this out. Yeah. So everybody, it's funny. You know, kids don't realize that. You know, everybody's been a kid at one point and kind of gone through these things.
No, they don't. It's so true. You always think you know something that your parents don't know.
Right. And then you get a little older, you go, oh yeah, they knew what I was doing. Not everything though. Not everything. Most of it. So that was kind of a crazy
tangent.
That was a great tangent. You realize that we have been talking for an hour and a half.
All right.
And I haven't even done my intro yet. See, you were worried.
Go ahead.
You were worried.
Go ahead.
I have this catharsis with every guest, and they're like, I don't know if I'm going to make it 3 hours. And like halfway through, I tell them we're halfway through, and they're like, what?
Okay, yeah. I'm just hanging in.
Okay, cool. How are you doing? Do you need a break or?
No, I'm okay. I'm good.
Right.
Yeah,
cool.
I might take some water.
All right.
Because my mouth is dry.
Yeah. You need to.
Do you need a cup, Matt? Need a cup of water?
Yeah. Actually, that wouldn't be bad. Thanks.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Better than not wet my whistle with booze the whole night.
That's a bad attitude. That is not the winning attitude.
Yeah, winning.
Winning. Right.
Winning.
I have winning. Winning is on the chart here. Right here. Winning exclamation point.
Winning in life.
It's great to be a technocrat. Please drink with me. Oh, no.
Sippy sip.
Okay. All right, so this is the show where we try to turn all of our guests to alcoholics, but mainly it just.
I think I'm already there.
It just doesn't to me.
I'm not an alcoholic. I'm a wino.
Nice.
Wine is fine.
Yeah. I have. I know people who are winos. Yeah, it's interesting how wine is a different.
It's different, but it's slow creeping in.
It's a
nice warm bath.
I just don't want to do beer anymore. You got to like commit to a six pack just to get started. You know,
beer's too much of a gut.
Yeah. But wine, yeah.
Wine is something for the evening.
You drink anything more than 40 proof, you could feel the cancer growing.
You feel your liver
just
overworking,
squeaking like a beaten dog. You know, running into the backyard.
I dread to think of what my 60s and 70s are going to be like if I live that long. But I think everything's going to catch up with me at some point.
I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a prepper. So
preparation,
right? Thinking about doom, right? My paranoia. I'm actually less of one now than I ever was before. I never mentioned this before in the show.
Mm.
So I could actually talk about, you know, have you seen my van before? You've seen my van at picnics, right?
I don't recall it.
That's the van I brought cross country. I never told my cross. Oh no, I did tell the cross country story.
I have to see a picture.
So the van is like it's epic.
It's huge.
It's an epic 4x4 van.
If you're gonna take it cross country.
Yeah, and we had I boxes in the back with tools, and it's we used all of it, everything. I thought I was being paranoid. We really used all of it.
No, you need camping stuff and everything.
Right. So, tools actually was the thing I needed the most to fix stuff as we went along.
As you
know.
Fix the van.
Just little stuff.
Fix the van's new.
A lot of stuff. Some of the stuff was under warranty.
Oh, that's not bad.
But like stuff, just like you know, I added so much stuff on. Some of that stuff broke. Some of the stuff in the trailer broke. Minor repairs. And it's always good to have tools and gear, right?
Isn't that what? Geeks do. They live by their gear.
I may have segued too much because I don't know what the heck I was talking about being a prepper. Oh, yeah. So,
Doomsday.
I learned a lesson, right? First, you know, I was very skeptical about the 2012 thing, partly because I was part of the remediation of it. Mm-hmm. So, I had a really, you know, we had a really good idea technically what was involved. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this isn't going to go global. This isn't going to turn into a pandemic or a collapse or anything. There's going to be spotty outages and then it's going to be over. There's been too much attention on it. But, like, I just, you know, I've been, I am into macroeconomics, and they scare the crap out of me. Mm. You know, the more you understand them, the more they scare you.
I'm glad I don't. I turn a blind eye.
It might be a blessing. You know, the more you understand about how money works, you're more you're like, but I learned something.
I know a little.
You know, after spending a little too much money here and a little too much money here and having too much leftover junk here, I'm like, the first prep is always normalcy. You know, prepare for things to just continue on a normal vector where there's no surprises.
I have a contingency plan in some cases, but I don't prepare long term.
Right, right. But it doesn't even matter what your preparation strategy. It doesn't matter if all you've got is like a 1 gallon of water and a ten pan bag of rice and a 10 pound bag of beans and a go bag, mm-hmm. and that's all you do. And that's really honestly, that's more than most people. And it costs like $150, and they're like, I mean, the Red Cross is like, psh, do that. I mean, they're literally like, they have commercials where
we
told you so. We're not coming for you until after you use that stuff up. So, you know, people are like, oh my god, you didn't get the go bag. So, but like, you know, you have to, the first prep is always normalcy, and that means living a happy, normal, long life. I think we're going to be living into the hundreds. I don't know how to tell you this. So if you're planning on checking out at 60, you're going to be using a suicide booth a la Futurama. Because
that could be a possibility.
Supposedly, you should be here any day now based on the Futurama time.
Futurama. I want to be a head in a jar.
Really?
I really do.
Really?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Live forever.
See?
Just
your first prep is being a head in a jar. I would vote for you to be one of the select heads in a jar.
They gotta keep me in a jar.
Nice.
But I tend to agree with you, I guess, for most people, but I just have this feeling, I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like I've abused myself.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, I mean, like robots are scary.
Hunter S. Thompson said, your life should be like, you know, you use up everything. You just go,
and your body should be ragged.
And
isn't he Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?
Yes, he is.
Steve just made me watch that, so I watched it.
Read it. Read the book.
Read the book.
I mean,
I watched it with my wife, and she's like, what the fuck is this?
Terry Gilliam did a phenomenal job of recreating the book.
Yeah.
You need to read the book.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
All right.
So he.
No,
but,
you gotta,
I mean, that quote isn't from that particular book. It is a Hunter S. quote, but it's the way you attack life, and I think that's how I do sometimes, not with caution. It's sort of like, let's do this. Let's see what the fuck happens. Oh, maybe I break something.
Hey,
maybe.
Is that a delightful swimming pool or a vat of acid? Vat of acid! But usually it's a swimming pool, right? Most of the time it's a swimming pool.
Maybe, yeah.
Right, right. See, I'm definitely in. I just want to be the second person to jump in.
Yeah, I got you.
Wait a minute for the blood curdling screams.
That's why I like you.
Matt's not going in. Wait. He knows something. Wait, let's watch and see what happens. Because it's awesome. Because then you get the good laugh, and you get to enjoy the full acid-burning smell without it happening to you.
Oh,
Where did I come up with that? What is it? Can you tell everybody?
You apply patches. You don't apply the first. You know, you wait a couple of weeks when the patch is released.
Right.
You wait till everybody else jumps into the pool.
Right. No, that, totally.
No,
actually, that's a really
an
excellent.
Right.
That's a serious patch strategy. We would, you know, it was there was a sense of urgency around
right.
zero days.
Critical patches.
But the urgency wasn't.
Out, but
wasn't,
you gotta watch what you're doing.
It wasn't always the urgency. Wasn't always to roll it out. The urgency was to figure out when to roll it out.
Yep.
And what to roll it out on.
Yep.
Because you could do more damage trying to
absolutely.
Fix it.
Absolutely. Like Meltdown Inspector, I think you have to change microcode. And changing microcode means you slow down the performance of the PC.
So what's Meltdown Inspector? I don't know what that is.
Meltdown Inspector are these IntelliChip vulnerabilities.
Oh, okay.
So obviously they're affecting every server.
Oh, is that the one that just came out like a few weeks ago?
It came out a year ago. Actually,
okay,
it was on the horizon even prior to that.
Okay.
But
I'm thinking of the one that came out a few weeks ago. There was a zombie
something. It
came out
over a year ago.
Yeah, okay.
It came out around right after WannaCry came out and
right.
hit big. Then that was on the tail of it. And then Petya, not Petya, came out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in between, we were trying to figure out, well, what do we do? Do we try to install the new patch and now I'm a little buzzed, so I'm trying to remember this vulnerability. I'm like,
best excuse you ever had. Yeah, I helped
no,
you out there.
Exactly, you did. I believe it was administrative access. Oh, I'm going to sound like an idiot, I know, but at any rate, we had to...
Don't get too detailed, and then it's fine.
Right, right.
And you're safe.
Well, the point is, when we tested the patch, it created such lag that the performance was degraded. So we realized we cannot do this.
Right.
You
test it and it didn't work.
6%, 10%
right.
degradation is going to affect the company on a whole.
Right.
So then you have to accept a risk.
Right.
Right?
And yeah.
Every company faces...
Sometimes the right way to do it is to do the patch, but you could just block a port, shut down a service, redirect something, put it in
right.
the, put it in
but
the private
particular,
network.
Right, it was it affects the processor.
Mm-hmm.
So
right. So how did you get started in computers? What got you into computers?
That is a very good question. I'm glad you asked me because I was prepared to answer you.
Yes.
We usually do
that at the beginning, but I don't know why we got an hour and a half in.
I had to think back how I really got into computers. I could talk to you about things, events that occurred along the way in my life, but... as a kid, my father loves his electronic gadgets. He always was buying, I call them toys, you know, whether it was a new radio, a recorder, where he presses the recorder. He's like, as a child, he's like, talk into that. He actually has recordings of me. And I was watching the tape spin in there and
right.
figuring out the buttons. Or he brought home a Casio electronic keyboard.
Right.
And he plays by ear, but you know, I was just playing there.
Interesting, your father's a musician.
He wouldn't call himself a musician.
If he
but
could
he
play
is.
By ear.
He could play. He yeah. plays the keyboard by ear and the accordion, there. Like he did it in the old country. I've never seen him here do it.
Right.
But then getting into games and toys, I was a huge Atari person.
Yeah. which Atari was
my
your first
cousin,
one?
The 5200, and I still have it. But
nice.
My male cousin came for a visit from Greece mm-hmm. when we were young. I don't even remember third grade. I don't know when the hell it was.
Mm-hmm.
But he came for a visit, and they wanted to buy him a gift, so they bought him an Atari gaming system to bring back and a couple of games.
Mm-hmm.
And I had envy. I'm like, what has he got that I don't have? How come, you know, what is it? And I think that, honestly, I think that is how I ended up in a lot of this field, because I always, it was like, anything a boy can do, I can do. Math, math. I can do that.
George Carlin thinks the foundation for human civilization is envy. So he's probably not wrong.
No, he's probably not.
Some truth
and
that.
I do love George Carlin.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He was, you know, but so I spent Saturdays playing Atari when I should have been doing chores that my mother laid out for me.
Right.
And so I love that. But, you know, bring it to fifth grade, they got computers in the school. We only got two, and it was like the spring semester in fifth grade. Commodore. I don't remember if it was a Commodore PET or a Commodore 64, but you had to sign in when you got to get to play the games.
Right.
And they had some pretty cool math games. But anyway, you know, I had regular computing in school, and I took BASIC and Pascal.
Did you ever play Oregon Trail?
Well. No.
Oh, okay.
I my first PC that was actually my own that mm-hmm. I did not use for the school. This is a good story.
Okay.
So we were moving out of the dorms in Albany, and I was in the towers. I don't know if you know Albany State University. There's four quads, mm-hmm. And they're about 22 stories high.
Okay.
So moving in day and moving out day means a lot of going up and down in the elevators. You know, every student has their parents lugging crates and whatnot. So on the last day, I was moving into a summer sublet or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and there was this computer going up and down in the elevator all day. It was just, honestly, somebody left it in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was going up and down and moving my stuff into the car or whatever, I see this PC there, and I'm like, isn't this anybody's? And on my last go down, I'm like, you know what? I don't have a computer. I want to take this computer. So I fucking stole
your
computer.
All right, hacker power.
So now
you work in security.
So then, wait, I plug it in. Exactly. I plug it in. I get it to my new apartment.
I've heard of dumpster diver, but elevator diver?
Nobody was claiming it. It was up and down all day. I think what happened was somebody in a haste to get out, their mommy and daddy probably was like, let's go, and they probably left it there and didn't come back.
They're gonna
back
find
for
you
it.
Now. They're gonna see this video and find you.
I welcome you too.
You started an IT career, a flourishing one. Good job.
It was an IBM PS2.
Wow.
If you know what that is.
Yes, but I do. PS2s were pretty awesome.
It was
back
from
in the
time. I plugged it in and black screen. So I'm like, oh, is it broken? I didn't know. So I read up on stuff. Oh, you need an operating system for the light to go like this.
Wait. Computer. Computer.
I thought you just powered up.
Use the keyboard.
I thought it was going to be like
quaint.
In the labs, you know, the VAX terminals. I just thought it was going to be something like, no, I wasn't that silly. But
right.
But I'm like, well, there's nothing on here. So I went to CompUSA, and I spent my allowance on DOS 6.0, I think, was out at the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the floppy disks that
Microsoft
you had to...
Microsoft DOS or IBM DOS? I think
IBM
was...
IBM DOS. It was
nice.
IBM DOS.
Because
it's not, yes, not Microsoft.
I knew to ask.
And I knew what it... I remember. I have all the disks, so this is why I told you. Show and tell.
Yep.
And you had to feed them in the sequence, one at a time. And lo and behold, I...
Had a PS2?
I had a PS2 operating system. But the operating system was just a command line, right?
Right, right.
So now I wanted to use Windows. Oh, fuck, I got to go back to CompUSA and buy a Microsoft product.
Right.
I put it on top of
What version of Windows was that? Was that 2?
No, I think it was 3.1 at the time.
Nice. Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure it was 3.1.
Nice.
And then...
So that's a pretty good experience. Then.
Yeah, that was... I mean, For the longest time, I just had...
Decade plus without Windows on DOS.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I did a lot with DOS. I mean, I learned about, you know, making directories and files. But then, mostly it was gaming. I guess I bought whatever DOS games on disk that I could
find. Did you have the flight simulator?
No, I had one that was like Indiana Jones type of thing. What was it called?
No,
not Doom.
Load Runner?
It might be something
Load Runner
I don't remember the name.
PS.
But it was, you know... you kind of go Borland. Look for these little...
Yeah, Borland Load Runner, yeah. They were
okay.
the ones who made Load Runner.
That,
yeah.
that might have been it. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, that was one of the best games.
I'm definitely hazy on
there
that.
There was, I had a 286,
uh-huh.
and I had an EGA card, but of course, there was a very limited pool of games.
Right.
So I know most of them. That's why I was asking.
Good.
Flight Simulator, Load Runner.
Because, I mean, I know it was a flight, but I enjoyed the Indiana Jones type
Load Runner.
Runner.
Yeah, yeah.
It
was like Pitfall almost.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you know what I'm talking about. Wow. And it's been a long time since I played. Oh, I have like a little special memory in my heart.
A special memory in my microphone. Oh, no, the flight.
I have a special memory in my heart about doing that. And that was like 93 or something.
Right.
But
that was
a
pretty slow machine at that point.
I upgraded it.
They might have left it.
I upgraded it.
They might have left it there on purpose.
I upgraded it.
So I don't feel too guilty.
Went online to, or I didn't go online. What am I saying? I went again. It was always me buying it from CompUSA, but I think I bought the RAM and I.
Did you go 386 or?
It was a 386.
You went 386.
Yeah.
Did you play Doom on that?
No, I didn't play Doom. I've never played Doom. I know. I have I have no geek cred because I've never played Doom.
Do you do any first-person shooters or?
Not really. I tried Call of Duty, but he's laughing over there. Laugh. Go ahead.
Maybe it isn't a good starting point.
Well, I played. I guess I'm not into the first.
You know, I'll tell you the truth.
I'm more into the Pac-Man.
I jumped
Yars Revenge
straight to a 486 from a 286.
Okay. Oh, good.
So I went from basically all like, like simple side scrollers, like Load Runner,
arrow keys.
Oh, you know, there were first person games that they were mm-hmm. very good. I had a vet game that was, or
I had a mystery game like you go into each room in the house, I think, and you get a clue.
Oh, what's that? What was the name of that test pilot that went to speed of sound for the first time?
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he had a game.
Fact checker.
he had a game named after him, and that was a flight simulator. But back then, our flight simulator was, you know, because I had an EGA card, it was 16 colors instead of 4. But it was just lines, you know, just lines.
Yeah,
mountains of line. One of the best ones I had was Apache, and that was. Lines for mountains, lines for the occasional tree, and lines for tanks.
Ooh.
Yeah, and lines for camps, which were just like teepees.
How slow did it move? Did it like just
that was,
go
it
like
was,
this?
It was like 6 to 8 frames a second.
Okay.
It wasn't bad. You know, it was watchable. Right. You know, it was playable. I spent a lot of time playing that.
Exactly.
Arming Hellfire missiles, learning the difference between Sidewinders and, you know.
So games is what got me into playing with computers, but then there was actually a point in my life when I jettisoned careers. So as I mentioned, I went to Albany, I studied I started with business, didn't get into the business school, ended up with a communication and rhetoric major, an English minor. Then I pursued a career. I wanted to be a writer. Journalist, writer.
Really?
Yeah.
What were we gonna write about? Just journalism, like news?
Journalism. I wanted to write for the Rolling Stone, that sort of thing, but...
Did you envision yourself flying off the far-flung places?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. You envision yourself flying off the far-flung places and...
I just want to have conversations with people. I think that's what it was about. Like, I really do enjoy...
Oh, so this is totally your bag.
Yeah, I really... And writing about it and having commentary, written commentary. And I love the written word. And I was actually a good writer in school. I got... I excelled there. I always had teachers encourage me, tutor other people. I knew my grammar.
Right.
So that sort of thing. So I didn't know... The thing is, I had no mentor. I had no direction.
Right.
I found an internship up there that was with a local zine. It was a music zine.
Mm-hmm.
So the publisher, you know, he gave me a few things to write about, and I was excited about it. But there's no money. So I had to come back down eventually, live back with my folks. And then I was hunting for a job in the big city, and I worked in publishing. So this is pre-9/11, the late 90s. I was in publishing, and I thought that was it. I was going to be in publishing for the rest of my life. I made what money? I mean, we're talking not even $30,000 a year.
That's publishing.
But you know what? I was having the time of my life.
Do you watch BoJack Horseman?
I have to.
So there is a...
That is the king of self-deprecating comedy.
It's on Adult Swim, right?
Netflix.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right, better yet.
Yeah, so there's a character in there who is a penguin, and he's in publishing. And he's very, very...
I always love
the poor guy.
My favorite characters on Family Guy are Stewie and Brian.
Right.
And Brian's always writing his novel. He's like, yes, I'm writing my memoirs. I'm writing my novel.
I wonder if it's a rip off on Snoopy.
And Stewie's like, it is. But Stewie is like, how's it come along? Your book. How's it come? And he's just, you know, poking at Brian.
Hey, you done with that book yet?
Brian hasn't done squat. We all know that. It's writer's block.
He drives a Prius. And that's his accomplishment.
And that was me. I thought that I was going to be a writer, but by working in publishing and, I don't know, partying by night. And
right.
I didn't write very much. What I did was try.
Right.
And fail.
Well?
I failed. And what happened was I got laid off. I got laid off again. 9/11 happened. There was no job, like nowhere for me.
It was rough.
It was rough.
That was a rough time in every business.
Things were converging, so I thought I was going to be the master.
Particularly in New York.
Absolutely. I was working on Third Avenue, and I remember going to Scholastic for an interview, and they wanted not just. I worked in Quark Express, which is a layout software. And oh, look at her! She knows. I get all excited, that lady. I know Quark was sexy, wasn't it? I loved it.
Yeah, people like Quark.
So I was going to be, you know, a layout master, and then Scholastic is like, well, do you know Adobe Illustrator? Do you know how to, use Photoshop? And do you know HTML? And I'm like, but I know Quark, you know, and I was a proofreader, but all of a sudden they wanted more skills. So a lot of my friends, or at least one major influence in publishing, mm-hmm. had gone into web content editing. Mm-hmm. He made three times as much as we were making in book publishing. So he worked for EarthWeb, and basically he just had to learn HTML. And being that when I was at, I worked at a company called John Wiley & Sons, which is still around, major publisher. They published computer books. I was in the computer book line.
Oh, you were in the documentation business.
I was. I was just in production.
Originally, that was the only business model Linux people could say with a straight face was going to work.
Really?
Yeah, like in the mid-90s, it was basically you wrote a Linux book or you didn't make any money
out
of it.
We had Oracle books, we had SQL, and this is before I even understood what that stuff really was, but I decided after, I guess, around 2002, I have to go back to school. I was going to go back and just to brush up and learn HTML and how to do some of this web stuff that was burgeoning, and that's where the money was.
Right.
So I had a long, hard discussion with my dad because I knew that I would have to move back in with him.
You know what?
He would have to subsidize me.
I wish I knew you, because I could have helped you prep for that conversation, because my mom had an MBA, and she was taught business, mm-hmm. and she transitioned from teaching business into teaching computers, and she transitioned from teaching computers to computers and math. So she could have helped
no,
you make that case.
No, it went okay. My father, he always supported us financially. He still does. I mean, he is a man's man. My daughters, exactly. Where's the pipe?
Yeah.
But he's very supportive in that sense. And so he said, all right, if you go back to school, last time I'm paying for it, and you're going to study hard.
hard.
Isn't it weird when you're an adult and you have to pitch something to your parents? You're like you're talking to a boardroom. Like,
I just knew that I couldn't.
Charts and graphs. And,
right,
you know,
exactly. That's like, here's your ROI.
And you know, secretly they have a little tear in their eye, like, ah, they're all grown up. Mm. This is almost boring.
Oh, I was past grown up at that point. I was 30.
Yeah.
So I should have had a career.
Had you had a Linux moment yet at that point, or no?
Linux came through going back to school to Farmingdale.
That was it, Farmingdale.
Where I met Jeannie, where I met Johnny Payne.
Right. Linux geeks.
It's so funny how things change. So I was working. I took a part-time job my first semester at Farmingdale. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, I went to Farmingdale. I was going to go to the visual communication department because that's where I would learn Adobe and Dreamweaver and all the stuff that was going to get me into web. Mm-hmm. So my initial semester was still open-minded about this stuff. So I was taking a few of the core courses, and I was working at this small card shop, and you know, it was kind of slow during the day, and I love magazines, so I was going through them, and I actually picked up a Barron's. You know what Barron's is, right?
Oh, no. I know. Of course I know what Barron's is.
I had matured to the point where I tossed the Rolling Stone and the Spin magazine aside, and I was like, what's this? On the cover of this Barron's, it was a cartoon graphic of the Statue of Liberty, and it said, give me your coders, your developers, your software programmers, because at that point there was a wave of Indians coming into...
It was an article about H-1Bs.
Exactly. We were outsourcing... there was a need for programmers, and we were outsourcing at that point.
Right.
And I saw that, and I was like, maybe I should go into computer programming, because then they don't have...
They're pulling people in from other countries.
Exactly. I'm like, I'm right here. You can take me in New York, and you don't have to bring somebody
from
another
country. You have to relocate someone.
Yeah, exactly. So that's when I guess I went to the BCS program.
So you did it for greed.
I did.
Yeah,
I did it
for greed. Come on,
a little bit
at least.
I tell all you young girls out there, there is good money, and you can survive.
Steve's listening.
What are you doing in music? Learn from me. Learn from me. I did it because I didn't want to live with my daddy and mommy anymore.
Yeah.
I wanted to stand on my own. I wanted to survive. I wanted to have the American dream, a home.
Right, yeah.
Your car.
Independence.
And I didn't want
to
get laid off again and again. And I had grown up at that point. That's when I decided I got to do this. And I said to myself, you know, this is going to take me learning everything all over again. Object-oriented programming? What the fuck is that? What happened to, you know, BASIC? Mm-hmm. And I know you spoke...
That's terrifying.
I know you spoke in another show about sequential programming. I used to love the go-to loop, you know? I could do that, you know?
Yeah.
I could say, read line 150.
Right.
Then, oops, I forgot something. Let's make it, you know, 145. You know, throw something in there.
Right.
But,
Well, that's why they had object-oriented programming. No go-tos.
No go-tos. Then it's calling this.
Just like what's her name in The Incredibles. No capes.
Oh, I love
no go-tos.
No go-tos. No more go-tos. So I just pushed myself. I said, I can do this. I know I can. I'm like, what were my highest scoring grades back in high school? Well, I always did well in English and math. Believe it or not, I wasn't a history buff. I like science, but those two were my leading classes. And I'm like, if I can get it, back into my head, get back into that mode, and just do the work, I think I can find something that I like. And I mean, I tried all sorts of things within the program, and how I ended up with security is still amazing to me, because
I had no confidence. I was like, oh, I can't do what the hackers do. I can't even understand PKI. I had so much trouble just learning public key, private key exchange.
The people who get in
back
trouble.
Back and forth. I'm like, somebody really, you know,
the people
can
who
we
get
do
into trouble,
Muppets?
The people who get in trouble are the people who think they do understand PKI.
Oh.
You know, it never having rolled out a campus-wide PKI, you know, kind of management infrastructure. Yeah, there's always something else. You're right. It's a lot of security implementation, security development is the craziest, scariest, riskiest thing because it's you got to understand everything. You got to understand the system.
Yes.
You got to understand the math.
Yes.
You got to understand the programming. You have to understand the library.
The algorithms, the hashes.
There are always in to break it.
You got to understand the protocol.
You have to really grok the math.
You've got to get granular. Or at least, you know.
And then you got to test the hell out of it.
Fake it till you make it.
Usually, most things, yes, but in security, I don't.
Yeah,
if I could possibly avoid it,
that's true.
I really try to avoid faking it. You know,
I align with people who are in the know.
Right.
I listen to the ones who have the knowledge, who have deep dive, and I think that's how I grow, and I'm the translator. This comes. We can talk about bridging that gap between leadership and technology now.
Yeah. Because, all right. Cool. Let's do it.
Because
how'd you know I put that little mark there?
I don't know what those marks mean.
Yeah.
I just know
that's the stuff we haven't covered yet.
This is something that I experience as a manager in cybersecurity. So you have these. Engineers, security engineers, security analysts, real hands-on, I don't want to call them geeks, they're just SMEs.
Geeks.
Subject matter experts.
Nerds!
Exactly! Geeks, lovers of... Yeah. Bridge of the nerds.
Yeah,
I got that. But they love being in it. And you know what? I was there too because I was able to configure certain systems. I implemented DLP. I configured identity and access management applications.
Tell the audience what DLP is.
Data loss prevention,
okay.
Or data leakage, sometimes it's called.
Okay.
But basically, it's a very powerful application that monitors you. Yes, you are being monitored. We can see what you write in your emails. We can see what you send out from your company.
Oh, so I see. So you're tagging particular kinds of. So this is kind of going into the zero trust thing a little bit. You're tagging certain kinds of data.
Absolutely. So you create policies within DLP. So we'll use healthcare. So what are our jewels? PHI, that's patient health information.
Okay.
What comprises patient health information? A first name, a last name, a date of birth, an MRN number, which is a medical record number, maybe an SSN number. Because when you go into a hospital or a healthcare facility, that's everything you give, except for the MRN number, to admissions, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you go in, you got to fill out all these forms, right? How do they identify you? All these components. So together, you create a policy. And the policy is looking for all of these parameters. And when you pass, say, an email that has a medical record in it to an outside component, it scans and it sees that all of those parameters are met. So, boom, it flags it as something, as a communication with PHI. Now, what do you do after you flag it? DLP is powerful enough where if you have an agent on your computer, it could block you from sending it.
Okay.
You can set up a little message that says you're violating policy by sending this outside of the organization, you know, and you could rank the policy. Or you can send it, but you want to encrypt it.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to encrypt it, then you would integrate probably email encryption type of application.
Right.
And with your DLP.
You guys using DKIM or using like GPT to sign things, to sign email messages?
Like PGP.
PGP, sorry, GPT is a GNU version, yeah. PGP. You're right, I'm wrong. Yeah, okay, PGP. Interesting.
So that's a typical thing. Like, so a lot of times people forget to send it through the encryption channels that we give them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you create a little, I mean, I didn't do this. I just know this is how
right.
it works.
But you couldn't, of course, you couldn't do this unless you did the data flow mapping in the first place.
Right.
Right.
I mean, I'm not the one who develops the architecture,
mm-hmm.
but I help implement the tool. And we work with the networking teams and pretty much the vendors.
Right.
The vendors are the ones who.
Well, if the software doesn't work right, you're done. Right.
Exactly.
You know, you need to be configured right.
Well, you know, the first time I worked on an implementation, the vendors came in, they installed it, but then I had to tweak it because all of a sudden we're getting all these alerts. It's alerting on everything that has 10 digits because it's identifying that as like a social security number.
So like,
I have to deal out the false positives
right.
and false negatives.
So you're doing like the minimal possible deploy and then slowly opening things up until it works. Just until it works,
right.
and no further.
Just dialing it
right.
To what you need to see, to what has meaning.
Right. To which emails you can send, which data sets you could send, which machines can connect to which machines.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, that's just an example with email.
Because also your email servers talking to each other have to be safe too. It can't just be sending
it off-site.
Well,
that's with zero trust. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, most of what I've dealt with so far to date has been internal to external.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're entering an age where with zero trust, you can't trust internally either. Right?
Right.
We have what trusted machines have certificates, right?
Right. Well, typically in an Active Directory, that was the genius of Active Directory, that it just basically took Kerberos and made it easy and automatic, you know. And every machine gets a ticket,
right.
and that's its certificate, and that says I'm valid, and I,
right.
you know, my transactions are signed on this network with the controlling servers.
Exactly. But now if we enter this place where you don't trust those machines until maybe there's another factor in place,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm interested.
Were
in
you
this,
guys typically doing
what?
Two-factor?
Two-factor has come into play with remote access.
Remote access. So
right.
they haven't. So it's zero trust in the local network, but you're enforcing that through inspection.
Zero trust. Sorry about that. But I haven't.
How dare you?
I haven't realized.
We are serious about our microphones here.
I haven't
the kind
entered
of harassment.
A
you
world
have to deal with work,
of zero
too.
Trust. I know.
Guys, they're manly voices. Listen to me in my manly
Don't
voice.
Touch
I'm going to smoke a pipe now. He sings heavy metal.
I was going to say that's a good. That's a good
he's
metal
pretty.
Voice. Good hardcore voice.
He's got
voice.
This one bit where I swear he sounds just like a dragon.
Death metal. A dragon?
Yeah, a dragon. He does it. I don't know. He can show you after.
Zero trust is not the world I work in right now. It is something that's coming. It's something that
right.
I'm looking
into. You guys
into.
Are in the planning
it's
stage.
It's on the horizon. It's a it's a recommendation for...
Is this to deal with a particular regulation or...
Nope. It's just we've entered a world where you can't trust anyone. You can't trust shit. You can't trust where your day is going. It's like, let's put it this way.
Is this partly in reaction to GDPR or or is
it's
this
in,
also
in
just,
reaction,
just trying to get be better at
I think it's,
making things
it's in
secure?
Reaction to a lot of the exfiltration of data.
Right.
So if you look at I don't know if you read the annual Verizon security report that comes out.
I don't.
Deal.
You know, we got
it's
lazy.
It's a big deal.
I know, and we got lazy. We got used to Bart heralding it for us.
Oh yes.
And now he doesn't do that anywhere, and so we're like clueless. So I have questions about that
right.
later. But keep
so,
going.
So it breaks it down into the verticals, as they're called: healthcare, finance, education, and what are I guess the trends in data loss. So more and more you see internal threats. Mm-hmm. We're protecting the external, the perimeter. It's stronger and stronger, and we're even using threat hunting to detect before it comes at us. But internally, we don't do nothing. That's where zero trust comes from.
Right. So yeah. Well, this is a continuation of Alexander, and you know, but at the same time of General Alexander and Snowden. Yeah, the Snowden general, and his assertion that you need to, you know, slice things into the network into smaller and smaller pieces.
Yes, that's exactly what this is. Yeah.
Right.
So I mean, I'm interested in learning more about it and seeing if it actually...
Actually, your description was really good.
If it's not just theory, but if it can work, you know, in the business world.
Well, I think for sure it can work. So the thing that concerns me is cost. I mean, it just seems
right.
like it's going to be non-trivial. I mean, email is inherently an open protocol. It's so broken, you know, and really insecure, and it's very expensive to secure in the support costs, because you have to interface with other institutions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be very interested to find out if this started to become an institution-wide adoption, where they started using PGP as the standard to safely move data back and forth. Because, I mean, I know a lot of industries, they just resort to faxes, because it's the only way they can...
You're right, actually, but secure fax.
It's all they can do. It's too crazy. It's just safer to fax. You know, at least you can only eavesdrop one transaction at a time, you know, instead of eavesdropping your entire cache, you know, mm-hmm. of emails going through. So, all right, that was really interesting. So are you guys thinking about moving this stuff to the cloud, or?
There is a lot of that being pushed now.
Right.
Because, like I said, AWS and Azure are coming in, and more developers, I think, like the tools that are offered. Now, I don't know. This is not my area of expertise, so I've been in workshops where like AWS describes how they have all these instances, which are like, I guess, virtual environments.
Mm-hmm.
You can control access to them, but yet I do know also that in the past, for example, Sony, the mm-hmm. Sony breach happened through AWS, because the instances that were spun up,
I didn't know that.
The default was always open to public. Now AWS has changed it so that way now a default, it's not the instance isn't made public.
Sony breach are you talking about? Is this
the one that happened years ago?
The one with the interview? So that was...
The PlayStation one?
Yes, the PlayStation one.
Do you know about that?
So...
They breached PlayStation Network and everyone's credit card information.
Oh, right, okay, sorry. Well, there was... I did know about that.
That would happen.
But I was actually thinking of the one...
2014 or 12.
The one with the interview, so that when they were going to release the North Korean movie.
Oh, right.
Right, where they were making fun of Kim Jong-un. It
was actually
North Korea that did it. And they said, you know, they got them. They totally, outed a whole bunch of private information in Sony. In retaliation for making that movie, which, by the way, is phenomenal. And
I haven't seen it, but I do like Seth Rogen.
Yeah, it's really good. And I saw it recently, so it was very weird doing the show and seeing the interview, and I'm like, is that me?
I have to see it.
Yeah, it's good.
I'll put it on my list. Moving to the cloud, I'm just seeing, because of it's all cost. It's all about pricing, right? It's much easier to pay for the service than to bring it in-house and on-premise and have the people maintain on-premise. I know you're smiling. On-prem service that have to be patched, that need dedicated staff and continuity.
Well, you know, this is we've talked at other times about SRE and the Netflix model. So they're kind of competing mm-hmm. models for trying to figure out how to spend money and where to spend it inside of a company. The SRE model is pretty simple. It's just error budgets. So in other words, fault budgets. So in other words, if you create downtime, that's, you only get a certain amount of downtime for your group. you know, and they break it up based on how they project each group's going to need it. And if you use it for your downtime, you're done. You're not deploying anything else.
Oh.
And then they have the Netflix model, which is basically just like, okay, everybody make as much chaos as you can.
Huh.
Right?
Well, I hear that model's doing rather well.
Well, the idea is being that if we, the hacker inside is, at least if we give people carte blanche to essentially hack anything they want, mm-hmm. and their employees, as long as they tell us about it and don't keep it a secret, you know,
okay.
and then that way, you know, and then the thinking is, if even if they take the whole damn thing down, it's just movies, who cares? But you guys are in medicine, so it's not just movies, and people die.
That's true. I'm amazed that they are hacking images, mm-hmm. like radiology images, to show lung cancer on someone who doesn't have lung cancer.
Can that you? Yes,
that has happened.
What?
It's in the recent news. I don't know if you wanna.
Fake.
This, but think of the implications of that. Think of your doc. If your technician.
It's insurance fraud, at the least.
Is reading this. I mean, the only use I can see is like real. You must really hate that person. That's really malicious.
Right, right.
You must want them to die.
But or they're really good at cooking crystal meth,
validate?
And you know, you want to inspire them. You know they have bad health insurance. Sorry, spoiler.
When I read about this, I'm like, well, you know. What can you gain from harming someone else?
Well, a lot, actually. You know, well, this is what I was talking about before. You know, this, most people are good most of the time, and most of the good people are really good most mm-hmm. of the time. They're really trying to help. They're trying to make the world a better place. But there are definitely people out there who don't have any empathy,
right.
and they don't
right.
give a damn.
Right.
And every model, to have a truly secure model, you have to keep that in mind. You have to be ready for someone to just go, not just AWOL,
right.
but completely AWOL.
Yeah.
Just do whatever it takes to win, and
that's
it doesn't
like
matter
when
who
I
they are.
That's like when I first heard, and again, it's like over a decade ago, about car hacks and how somebody, you know, now with the chips, you can slam on the brakes while somebody's going 65 miles an hour.
Yeah, this is crazy.
Scares the life out of me.
There will be someone on the show sooner
scares
or later.
Scares the life out of me.
If it kills me, if I have to kidnap them, and black bag them and drag them in here to interview them, I will get someone in the car industry eventually in here.
Recording this, we can send this as evidence later.
Yeah. And get someone in here to admit that these cars are hackable, because I'm saving lives, damn it. You know, I'll be saving a lot of lives. I'll be saving more lives than a Navy SEAL at that point, because sooner or later someone's going to figure it out, and they're not going to just hack one car, they're going to hack a fleet. And it's going to be bad.
It's going to be the wrong fleet,
too. It's going to be a fleet.
The one carrying weapons or something.
It could just be cops. It's just, I think that's my favorite scenario, because it's easier to understand.
That's true.
You just hack, all the cops drive the same car.
Mm-hmm.
You just hack the cops of one city.
Mm-hmm.
You own them. The whole city shuts down.
Infrastructure.
If you're lucky, everything just shuts down. If you're unlucky, you know, like if they plan it right, you know, like get all the cops to respond to a fake robbery or something, and then shut all the cars out.
Oh yeah. Well, that's
total riots.
That's
chaos.
A classic hack.
Right.
You know, divert the attention. Everyone's looking this way, and then you do what you want
right,
over here.
Right. Yeah. So it's a good social engineering strategy, right? So as you mentioned the Verizon report, actually, I wanted to ask you about cyber warfare. So what is the current state of cyber warfare? Who is the active enemy at the moment? Do you remember, or did you read it recently, or is it fresh in your memory?
I can't remember it from that report.
I have been out of the loop for a couple years.
I feel like it's the same old story.
It's the Koreans, Russians.
Russians, Chinese, and a lot of Nigerians, are sending the emails with ransomware.
Right.
So,
okay.
And I think we're seeing activity, too,
any
in
disappointments
South
with our allies? Or not cracking down on criminal elements in their countries?
I don't have the information
share
with you.
No, that's fine.
I apologize.
No, it's okay. I just wanted to remember that's probably good news. If it wasn't anything that stood out as shocking, then it's probably...
Right,
okay.
Right. Some,
our allies are still our allies, all right?
Exactly.
Because they aren't always. They haven't always
been.
Isn't
it nice that you can rely on your enemies?
It is, yeah. It's a nice, predictable... they make for a simpler podcast. Thanks, guys.
I wanted to finish what I was saying about leadership and technology.
Sure, go for it.
I was saying, you get these people who are geeks. geeks, techs, engineers in the weeds.
Did I cut you off? I'm sorry.
No, we just diverted. It's no, don't apologize.
All right, yeah.
I went with the flow.
All right, cool.
And this is the way I talk anyway.
I always
loop back, and I try.
We'll loop
to
back
close,
to an apology
I
later.
I try to close the loop because otherwise it'll eat at me, and tonight I won't be able to sleep. Like, I didn't finish saying what I wanted to say. Damn it. So you have people who are in applications, in the weeds, and then you have people at the top who don't understand what that guy is doing.
Right.
A perfect example to me would be somebody who works on a SIEM, S-I-E-M. That stands for Security Incident and Event Monitoring. Even now, it's kind of going away. It's like a dying art, but at its high point, it's a very strong tool. Have you heard of Splunk?
Yes, I know Splunk. Oh, totally.
Okay, so Splunk is.
Why don't you explain Splunk is what Splunk is to people?
So far as I know, Splunk is a. It's not a SIEM, but it's a. SIEM tool,
it's a log aggregator.
It's a log aggregator.
Yes, I went through a lot of meetings before I figured out how to say it.
But there's log aggregators and there's log collectors.
Right.
So make sure you.
It's a collector. But collectors are cheap. They're a dime a dozen.
Am I getting this?
Aggregators and processors are the hard part.
Right.
You know, you can really get in there and run algorithms again, and they can pre-cog stuff so that it's quicker, so you can just be.
Right.
I need this, and it'll
cut out the white.
Right up,
you can cut out the white noise too. Right.
Because normally logs are linear and. They're just they're just long. It's like reading a tape, and that
way
you can basically pre-process them with something like that.
And Splunk. Something like Splunk, which is a tool that helps you read these logs, puts it in like English language,
mm-hmm.
so that it isn't some like comma delimited one long tape.
Right. It's just a massive size of it.
And you can query it to look for specific events.
Mm-hmm.
So say you find out that someone in your some benign area here, someone in your marketing department accessed a financial document in the finance.
You're looking for
area.
An innocent accident.
Exactly, innocent accident.
Okay.
Now, how did that happen? Because the marketing person typically doesn't go into like maybe the budget files or the salary files. Oh, there's a good one. So somebody in marketing went into a finance folder, opened up an Excel sheet, you know, with all of the salaries of all the people in the company.
Mm-hmm.
How did that happen? That wasn't supposed to happen. Access was granted in error, supposedly.
Right.
Well, you look in the SIEM and you can pull up Active Directory logs to see what admin provided that user with the access to the group that gave folder access.
Right. So
now that's provided, you know,
and just that enough, if there's a pattern, it's probably a dumb accident.
If it's
a pattern, it's probably a dumb accident. Like if he made the same stupid mistake on every single server for every single file.
See, I would argue and say a pattern is more malicious. I would say a one-off is an accident. It's like, oops, I copied the wrong thing.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
But a pattern shows why is he continually giving this person access to things that he shouldn't be giving.
You know what? We're looking at different vectors on the same chart. So you're looking at the time vector.
Yes.
And you're saying over time he keeps making
that same
mistake.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it differently. Oh, sorry. I'm looking at it differently. instead of the time vector, I'm looking at it from the storage vector. Like, documents in this class have all been accessible.
Right.
So we're kind of having the same conversation. But yes, I see what you're saying.
So
you have to sit down and figure that out.
The old-fashioned way would have been an analyst pulling logs from the storage server,
right.
pulling a lot and trying to match time stamps.
It would take forever. It would be an all-day
thing. The SIM tool, snap, you got...
People would have meetings about whether they just to figure out whether they could justify taking the time out of their schedule just to do that.
Yeah, and then you never really got solid evidence. You know, it wasn't a match. It wasn't a perfect match. But with SIM tool, you can get that. And
nice.
you can prevent stuff. You can flag incidents. You could prevent things from happening.
Right.
Think about somebody who is doing a brute force attack, trying to log in with a username that they got, but mm-hmm. they don't know the password. So they keep trying over and over and over again. The
right.
SIM alerts you. It's like, hey, what's
right.
up here? There's been 200 attempts on this one username.
Well, so what most people don't know is that's kind of this pattern recognition is kind of like a signature recognition. And those signatures may sound familiar to some people. Most people have heard the word signature before
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
with virus signatures.
Yes.
So it's the same kind of thing.
Yes.
You can the same kind of virus signature that
yes.
you might apply to your memory and your computer or your processor, you can apply to your whole network. You know, it's the same kind of methodology. And this is one of the components in figuring and creating a comprehensive signature. Right.
Yeah. So again, using the SIM guy as an example, the guy at the top doesn't understand that an event is happening. What is the weight of this event? Is it a breach? And that's where a manager would kind of waylay that information, but
right.
in some form that leadership would understand. Oh,
right.
Look, we're getting a DDoS attack, or we're experiencing.
Here's
an
what
outage.
We know. Here's when we'll know
right,
more.
Right.
Here's when we know what courses of action to take.
Because if you just spit out a SIM report with all the logs, and here's the SIM engineer saying, look what I got. Look at these packets or something. You can't show that to the CIO and have the CIO understand what's going on.
Right.
So I always feel like I'm the translator.
I like just like the frantic
the
yelling. That's great when IT departments just go to frantic yelling
oh
and
God,
running around.
Oh my God!
It's like something straight out of Monty Python, you know.
That'd be great. Then you sail the
security.
Ship away. You sail the ship away.
Yeah, nothing can get hacked if nothing gets done.
and then the CIO comes and just unplugs the server.
Yeah, I'm going to call Con Ed. You know, I'm just not going to pay the Con Ed bill. It'll solve itself. That was a great explanation. Thank you. Is there something we missed on your sheet? Because I have stuff for you, too.
If we did, we did. I don't know.
I don't see it.
What
I don't
time
see it.
Point are we at? Are we close to 3?
We're close to 3. How do you feel? Are you burnt? Do you want to quit or do you want to go
not.
For more?
What else can we talk about?
You
what,
seem
what
like you're a little
you
burnt.
Here?
Well, let's see. Well, what do we got?
I would say loopy. Because
loopy?
I've never combined strong coffee with... wine.
Yes.
I've got some kind of
well,
weird.
Well, this is it. See, we
there's
shine.
Some strange buzz going
we,
on.
We shine. We drug
Have
you.
I've been abducted.
We shine bright lights on you, and then we ask you questions.
And you make me feel awkward and weird. It's junior high all over again.
See, 7th and 8th graders, meanest people in the world. I told you in the beginning where this was all going.
I just come full circle.
Well, how about pop culture? That's easy.
Yes,
so,
that's, I saw what
is there
you put
any,
here.
Is there anything that you want to talk about? I see that you mentioned you're a Black Mirror fan.
I am a Black Mirror fan. I've watched the first two seasons just recently. You know, I don't know if I should get into episodes or not because I don't want any spoilers.
Well, just don't do the new season, that's all.
Let me say how fascinated I am with Twilight Zone, with, remember Ray Bradbury
I love
Theater?
Twilight Zone. I love both Twilight Zones, the new and the old.
I haven't seen the new. Actually, was it Jordan Peele? Didn't he reboot
wasn't that
it?
It was 80s and early 90s?
Oh, that's not even the new one. Don't you know?
Oh, the new, oh I'm not even talking about the new one.
New Twilight Zone.
I'm talking about the new Twilight Zone. the new Neutron.
I did like it rebooted in the 80s.
Yeah, there were some good ones.
There was some, especially in the 80s when you had that fear of the bomb dropping, you know,
Ship
hitting the button or
the one with the aliens where they came down and they're like you have 24 hours and everybody runs around like crazy people.
I saw the one where the woman
let's just put
uncovered
it this way. People guessed at what the aliens wanted and they may not have gotten it right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that goes back to the original series.
Right.
What is it?
How to serve man. How to serve man.
To serve man. Not how to serve man. To serve man. That's great. I love a lot of the ones with Burgess Meredith because not just the one where he gets locked in the bank vault and the bomb goes off and he's left with a library to himself.
I did miss some of the old ones.
Break.
That one. Okay, yes. I did see that one, yeah.
But there's one where, and I can associate, I love Burgess Meredith always picks the good ones, but where he's living in a dystopian future, not too far from 1984. It's akin to 1984, where you have these fascist dictators.
So like now, but with more steampunk stuff.
Pretty much, right. Twilight Zone, Twilight Zone. So, Burgess Meredith is a relic of the old world because he likes to he lives in his apartment with all of his books that he reads, goes through pages, and he stores knowledge up here. But society says, no, you know, you are not following the norm. So, of course, he faces a trial, and the verdict of the trial is death. He has to be executed. But he gets to choose the method of his execution. And he said, okay, you know, I'd like it in my home, and I'd like you, sir. And it wasn't the judge. It was like it was one of the righteous soldier corporals, whoever,
right.
has to come visit him to make a final goodbye. So,
right.
Do you remember this one at all?
No, I don't remember this.
I'm not gonna reveal the ending.
No! Come on! You're not gonna find it on Netflix. It's gonna take forever.
Sergeant, corporal, whatever, authoritative figure comes to visit him. He's like, okay, you know, gonna say goodbye. You know, sorry it had to go down this way. And Burgess Meredith just kind of rails on about how he was judged, and he was judged for knowledge, for basically trying to educate himself, and that he was in the right, society was in the wrong.
Right.
So as the corporal, lieutenant, whatever, goes to leave, the door locks, and he gets trapped in there with Burgess Meredith. And so he starts thinking he's going to die because there's a bomb that's going to go off.
Right.
And, in the final seconds, Meredith gives him mercy and he opens the door and the guy runs out. Bomb goes off. Meredith dies. Now, the corporal has to go back to the, fascist-looking courtroom, and he is now judged, and they're convicting him of the crime of not following duty. I think it was called the trial.
Oh, cool. Okay, I see it.
It's another great
not following
Twilight.
You will follow others.
Yeah, it's exactly.
Yeah.
You are the one now who is against the norm.
Right,
you've
right.
Gone against the norm.
There was one of my jobs that was an ongoing joke. You know, I was just following orders.
Yeah, you could always get away with that.
Yeah.
Twilight Zone, Black Mirror is the same, except Black Mirror uses technology, things that we have today. Social networking is our enemy. What was the one that I saw where, oh, this was fantastic. There's an episode of Black Mirror where you can pretty much rewind your memory.
Yes, I remember that
you
one.
You saw that one where
yeah.
you kind of,
we'll tell
it's,
them
called
anyway.
The it's called the history of me or
you
the
just,
history
you just
of
pitched,
her.
You just pitched Twilight Zone, now you can pitch Black Mirror to people.
Black Mirror, so, and this is the second season, so you should have seen it by now. But imagine a way that you can access your memories and just go forward and back, and then you actually start to hyper-analyze events that happen. Imagine if I play the last 10 minutes of this conversation over and over, and I start to pick up these things like, wait a minute, Matt was staring at me in a certain way. What does that mean?
Welcome to my mind.
The imagination runs wild. So all the things you don't see the first time, you can go back and see, and think of how that would affect your future.
Right.
You know, you can
overanalyze everything.
Everything to the nth degree. Drive yourself crazy,
right.
And you can also affect your happiness. I think that was the outcome.
Is this the one where they're cheating?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a couple.
Right. There was all kinds of untoward. All the untoward uses of being able to rewind your own memories in detail. Infidium,
mm-hmm.
without wearing it out, or
and I think it starts off when he goes for a job interview and he rewinds it while he's in the cab going home, and he realizes he didn't get the job because there was two tells in the exchange that he's like, the man said, I hope that we get a chance to see you. Like, I hope to look forward to talking to you. Just that falter, and a woman checking something on, he rewound it and he's like, I didn't get the job. Like, it was a failure on him.
Right.
But, oh my God, I don't want to obsess like that. I don't want to live in a world where you can do that.
Right.
Of course, there's a dark ending. There's a dark ending to that.
By the way, this is exactly how the show works. So I go home and watch the episode over and over.
Oh my God, it's like,
why did I do that?
It's like looking in a mirror.
What dumb joke.
That has a mirror in back of you, and you just keep looking at your reflection.
I flub one line and don't sleep for 3 days. No, I'm just kidding. If I did that, I'd be dead already. I wouldn't even have made it this far. It's really bad.
Anyway, I love Black Mirror. As a young adult, I loved Ray Bradbury. Learning about there was one that I think you can clone you have a clone in the basement, mm-hmm. and your wife doesn't know about it, but you activate the clone or the robot to keep her company while you go out and do whatever, right?
Nice.
And then the whole twist is you come back and your wife in bed was her clone. And you're like, oh my God, she's cheating too, But I love twists like that. And also,
the biggest problem is getting your clone to age as fast as you are.
Makes you wonder, what's she doing? Wait a minute, I thought I was stepping out on her, but...
Yeah, so, I gotcha.
As far as pop culture, I'm one of those people, I love sci-fi if it's done well. I'm a story person.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I love independent film. I actually tend to follow independent film more than blockbuster, because it's the story that drives you. It's the feelings that, are evoked. And I don't need all the CGI and the explosions and the intense love. I really don't like the movie Armageddon, and I know I'm gonna have a hate mail is gonna come in right now, mm-hmm. but it's got a great
maybe
cast.
Maybe not this audience.
It's
you might get away with that in this
cast,
show.
But then it's so unreal and super intense as they're trying to like blow up the core. It's like
the very best scene.
The
big
stupid.
Black guy
stupid.
Is on his motorcycle and they're trying to catch him. Right? Sorry if I'm ruining it for you, And they're trying to catch he's like the best driller in the world or something.
Right.
And they're trying to catch him and he doesn't know what the hell's going on. All he knows is that every federal agent in the world is after him.
And he won't stop.
He's like,
is that crazy?
And he's just riding.
But I think what I remember from that
scene where they're all chasing him down the road to get him to work for them, not because they want to bust him.
That was Ben Affleck's character.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Or I think they're trying to
the guy for the Green Mile, I forgot his name. Yeah. Anyway, keep going.
Anyway, actually, let's drop Armageddon. I mean, back.
What do you mean?
It's not worth talking about.
Well, okay.
You want to hear what a good movie is? There's a movie called Eighth Grade that came out. Listen, it came out last year.
You should check out the Jump Cut. They have a pretty good commentary.
And I
on movies and shows.
Oh, I mean, I'm an indie freak. I go to the cinema. I've been a member of the Cinema Arts Center forever. I used to go there in high school. My French teacher brought us there to see French films to try to, you know, pick up on the language. But foreign films are fantastic, and you shouldn't be afraid of subtitles because some of my favorite films are in other languages. Wings of Desire, you have to see that. That's one of the top film of all time.
I've not seen
Wim Wenders, Wings of Desire. There's some good horror too that has come out from other areas, but mostly, I mean, I like shows that kind of. Well, you know, what's hot on my list now? Handmaiden's Tale. I mean, these are the dystopian future ones.
You're right.
I like.
I don't know. Handmaiden's Tale.
Like you said, we're living it now. We are living in this era. It's kind of creepy.
Right. Well, so the good thing is, I think that I don't want to get away from. This is fun, so
yeah,
I don't want to get.
You're
we'll
right.
come
this
back around
fun.
To it. But like we're. I know it seems bad that social media seems like it's crushing, soul-crushing, and messing, you know, like that a giant company can mess with people's political views.
Yes.
And that countries can mess with people's political views. Both of those things
very
are scary.
Very scary.
You know, and that, you know, like, basically you can have, like, these disorganized, kind of crowdsourced, almost propaganda efforts as waves of ideas as people try to change each other's minds. But the good thing is, the reason this is possible the reason that the destruction is possible at that scale, I think, is because of the centralization. And a lot of that has to do with Web 2.0. So I don't know if you heard some of my Web 2.0 talk, my Web 3.0 talk.
Yeah.
So the idea is that, I have to do a cartoon of this. I've mentioned it way too many times. So Web 2.0 is, you know, walled garden. You ever hear that expression?
No.
So the idea behind Facebook is it's a walled garden. They have walls around Facebook, and you can go in there and you can play, and they make the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't like you, you're out. And if they don't like what's happening, they shut it down.
You talked about shadow banning in the past. That happened to a good friend of mine on Instagram.
It did?
Yes, and
it's
a shame. She had, and I guess I can promote her. She started a blog.
Oh, we're doomed here anyway. Go for it. You're not
going to
make it any worse for us. I'm on every list. Hello, one viewer.
She started a WordPress blog called shewalkssoftly.com.
Okay.
Her name is Dana Anhalt. I can say her name.
Yeah.
And basically, through the blog, she explores art, music.
How dare she? That's ridiculous.
Science. This all converge at the areas where they converge. Oddities. She loves oddities. You know, shrunken heads. Weird creatures.
You mean like everyone watching cable at 3 in the morning? Yeah.
Or shopping in Manhattan. but some
put
of
that
some of the art is surreal.
Yeah.
And I guess other people could be offended by it.
How dare they?
Exactly.
I'm offended by their offense.
The reason why I mention this is because this is her outlet. She's pretty sick. She's bedbound. That's all I'm going to say about it. I don't want to get into her personal stuff. But this is her outlet. This is how she connects with the world. And to think that somebody
and I assume she had a pretty good network.
She has a large network, international. But somebody flagged one of her pictures as reporting it, I guess, as offensive or blocking it, and that affected the whole algorithm of who can view what she's posting. Now, less people are viewing it, and she did have a large viewership and network. Many comments. Things that, that encouraged discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even know what shadow banning was until she, you know, started posting, "I've been shadow banned. Please help me get back, you know, out of this." I was shocked because I felt like it is horrible.
I'm laughing because it's horrible.
Because if anybody followed her,
that's the right reaction.
If anybody read what she wrote, her the intelligence behind her. If anybody followed what she was saying and why she was posting it, they never would have done that.
Right.
They didn't get her.
I did.
That's it. They didn't get her.
Yeah.
So then don't look.
Yeah. I completely agree. Totally. Yeah, and you know what?
Same with Facebook.
I'm heavily anti-censorship. I'm against doxing. I'm against, I'm against speech that is an action that directly harms another person. But as far as negative examples, we need negative examples in free speech. We need people to say dumb things and to get mocked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sorry. We need it. It's not pleasant. If you don't want to participate, stay away from it. But like, don't try to shut them down. Because you know what happens is, then if you completely erase that speech, someone else tries it again.
Right.
And if you erase
it, never
that,
goes
someone
away.
Else tries. It just multiplies it.
Honestly, it's like
censorship multiplies the speech that's being censored. The best way to promote a literary work is to ban it.
Oh, right, exactly.
It's just that all over again. You know, that's almost a quote from someone. I've forgotten who, but yeah.
Do you think Huck Finn would have been as popular if it wasn't banned?
No, absolutely not. And it's the same story played out over and over again. And I can't help but feel like someone missed a week in school to think that this is okay. You know, like, you missed it. You missed Western. You missed the Renaissance, folks. Come on, keep up here. You missed Gutenberg. Pay attention. Yeah. So that's a shame, and I'm glad you can promote her and
finish.
Send me a link.
I absolutely will.
So Web 2.5 is so you have these walled gardens everywhere.
Okay.
Twitter's a walled garden. Facebook's is a walled garden. Google's services are walled gardens. Like YouTube's a walled garden.
Yeah.
Right. So. And Web 2.5 is this idea that you can use the web browser, essentially, and I can say this now, I wasn't saying it when the show started, so that's how much it's changed in the past 3 months. It's really starting to take off. Web 2.5 is adding things into your browser and peeking over the wall and either adding in or extracting information.
And adding like a plugin, you mean?
Yeah, you put a plugin in like Firefox.
Okay.
Like,
yep.
The political one right now is Gab, which is Dissenter. And if you don't know, you probably have Dissenter comments on your pages, and if you don't have the plugin, you would never know it. Because, so it basically what it is, it's a database of URLs and comments that correlate to URLs.
Huh.
So, but if you're like, oh, well, that's, the Gab is evil or da-da-da-da-da, they're not, they're just evil people go there because they can do whatever they want. Of course, that's what happens, right, when you have a place where people can do whatever they want. That's how Twitter used to be before they started cracking down.
Well, I guess if I were to say anything should be censored, it might be certain images of violence and brutality that children can see. I mean,
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with protecting
the war.
I'm okay with protecting innocence. That's fine.
That's what I.
Yeah, I think that should be a parent.
Or like somebody getting their head chopped off and screaming. Do you want your 5-year-old seeing that?
No, but I need to be able to see that because I need to remember that motherfucker did that and that not to trust him. I can forgive him, but I don't have to trust him. I have to remember that he did that.
I'm about protecting the innocence.
Yeah. So that's a just cause.
But in a way, that is censorship because you're repressing that image.
They're not ready.
Exactly. They're not ready.
So children are different. Children, it's a totally different animal, right? How do you, when you have young children, what do? You put plastic things in the outlets so they don't stick their finger in it.
Yeah.
Right. You put up baby gates.
Innocent.
You put rubber things on the corners so they don't hurt themselves. And you create a safe place, right? That's a child thing, right?
Absolutely.
But like at some point, it's the parent's job to transition them from basically a crazy person rubber room, which is what it really is.
It is. It's a shelter.
They're little crazy people.
Yeah.
And you're trying to keep them alive long enough that they realize what they're doing is crazy.
And also,
that's kind of growing up.
Yeah.
and then, you know, when they get to a point, you can argue about what age it is.
You need to have an a well-adjusted adult. You need to bring them to that point. If they are traumatized in any way at a very young point, what are the chances of them being well-adjusted?
Yeah, of course. But at the same time, by the time they're 18, you know, when they're 18, the day they're 18, they can go to a military office, sign up.
Yeah, I know.
And kill and be killed. And, like, so at that point, somewhere in between that baby room and that day that they could sign their life away, they might at least need to hear that that's happening. You know,
hearing it,
and when they're past that age, they should be able to investigate it for themselves.
Right.
You know,
right.
I'm not saying.
No,
I practically puked when I saw Faces to Death when I was a kid. You know, I'm not into gore. But sometimes it's information. You know, sometimes it is.
And human nature is sometimes you can't look away. You're just curious.
And if an adult thinks they can't handle it, that's fine. But you know what? You're not informed. Stop thinking you're informed. And, you know, maybe it's time to back up until you're ready to be informed.
And those people who are doing that shadow banning, they're making that judgment for everybody. Mm-hmm. Who are they to do that?
Yeah, I don't want that at all. I mean, it's gross. I see gross stuff all the time, you know, because I go to the open places.
Being in cybersecurity.
Yeah, no. Well, you guys are the first defense against gross.
One of my first tasks was putting together a report on all the malware, the viruses that were out there. Mm. Well, a lot of the viruses showed naked people. it would pop a naked woman on your screen, and I was like, wow, this is my job? I get paid to do this?
Woohoo! Naked women virus!
I get paid to look at the viruses?
Naked woman viruses, nice. Yeah, well, as long as it's all legal and consensual at first.
Exactly.
And then it gets to not even talk about the really bad stuff. Actually, it's funny. I just had a conversation with a couple of cops at a car show, and there was many, many steps in between that. It wasn't like I met with a couple of cops and I'm like, I'm going to go meet with some cops. I just ended up sitting with some cops and they were talking.
Right.
And they were sharing all these stories about
what they did,
the jobs they did after being cops. They're like, we don't even want to talk about the stuff we saw when we were cops. It's too horrible.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is really tough. It's tough to, but you know what? Somebody's got to do it, and you know, maybe part of realizing whether you can handle that or not is being able to look at that video of that guy's head done and chopped off.
Exactly.
And then when you see that, are you going to say halt and stop it, or are you going to go and run away? and screaming and just panicking and.
Well, let me say, when I went back,
woke everyone up with that scream, didn't I? Sorry, I hope the filter worked.
We got compressors, you're good.
Okay, good. Yes, the compressor worked.
That is why I didn't go into computer forensics because I mean I have such a desire to go into computer forensics. I love those ID crime shows and where they, you know, they come in, they take the computer away and then they, you know, dissect the hard drive.
Louisa was sure she could find the evidence on the computer.
But when I found out the majority of the cases are for child pornography, I had to ask myself, do I have the sustenance to look at pictures, all of these pictures, over and over and over again? I mean, yeah, I want to get the criminal, but can I stomach that? I mean, kudos to those who do that job because it's a tough one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really tough. That's the worst case, I think. That's just.
But
you know what? If no one does it, guess what? They just run around.
It's a high-paying field, computer forensics. Of course, you could use legal cases and other things, but you can't unsee things many times.
Right.
Wish you could erase that. You know, go into your memory chip and hit the button.
Oh, I like it, Vibram. Okay.
We don't need that anymore. I wish.
I just wrote down what it was so I remembered. Well, in a way, that's what police do, right? They write out a police report.
That's reporting.
Yeah, so they don't forget what it was because by the time it comes up in court, they're like, I don't know.
Yeah. I've seen 10
what did I write?
That already.
That's what happened. Yes, I'll testify to that because I trust it's my handwriting. You know, what do you really trust? You know, what we were talking about before, you know?
What do you?
Yeah, if someone could, you know, like you were saying with the MRI, x-ray, you just slip in something in their handwriting. You know, this is one of the reasons I'm doing this show live, because it's getting easier and easier to do through edits to make put lies in people's mouths.
Well, but by you it make being... me look really good, like a size 10?
That's not how it works.
Oh, come on.
That's great.
I mean, look like Winona Ryder.
You're really funny. Well, I think we're done. We have 3 hours.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you did really awesome, and it was
Thank
a lot
you.
Of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Would you like to come back on?
Of course I would. Oh, I'm getting applause. Thank you. It was a pleasure and an honor.
Thanks so much. Thanks so much, Louisa, for being on. And good night. See you next week on the Technocrat Live.